inside the round. Oh, Chris, he's found three. It's down to a 2-on-2. Chris, can he close this with an ace? Oh, my God.
He gives him a chance at least, and this CZ kill could be everything. Finally, Zeus, he does something.
Looking for a second, he connects it. Oh, and he gets a third as well. Surely he's not going to pull this off.
He's already got three.
Oh my God, Zyru! Unbelievable!
Hey everybody, I hope you've had a wonderful new year. And if you are here joining us for our first show of the new year, we're going to kick it off good. We're going to kick it off well. But yeah, Thorin, how are you doing, my dude? Have you had a nice new year so far?
In general, like I've been, like it sounds like a lot of people have been a little bit under the weather. I've been like a little bit ill, like just sapped a bit of my energy. But in general, I think things are pretty good overall. Like I have to say, for the start of a new year, I think for me, actually, this is probably the most chill start to a year I've had in ages in esports, mate. Like it feels like every other year there was always some like mad drama. I mean, look, jokes aside, there was obviously a reason last year why it wasn't that pleasant for the first week of January. But that's aside, we've already done that on Petty Grievances for all of 2022. So I think everyone should know what soap opera I'm referring to. But from that, every other year, I always felt like it's funny because think of all the content me and Richard have done the last year or so about like esports is dead, it's dying, don't bother saving it, it's fucking garbage. At the same time, I've sort of just like acclimatized to where it's at though. So I don't actually feel that sort of like, I don't feel despair. But I will say, this is obviously a self-indulgent point, but I actually think part of the reason why though is because it's different if you have no control over your situation. Whereas I actually do feel like through this company and some of the things I'm trying to, I actually feel like I've got sort of a handle on what I want to do this year. So I don't feel blocked by anyone, so I've quite an optimistic mentality for 2023. What about you?
That's legit. I'm in essentially the complete opposite situation right now. We're like, I had a fantastic Christmas, great New Year. Spent time with friends, spent time with family. It was Too Good's 40th birthday, so we threw a big bash. Oh, okay. He threw a big bash in town for New Year's, and so it was like the New Year bash with like, it felt like an old Twitch party, dude. It was such a trip, and I mean, maybe that's also like the kind of nostalgia thing that I'm dealing with right now, because that party felt like an old like 2014 DreamHack after party.
And the joke is, if you ran down the list of names, I'm sure it was like it was all the people from Sweden at those events, right?
All sorts of like old DreamHack people, all sorts of esports.
I bet I could guess half the list. Broadcast. I bet it was like late year of like Get Right's former girlfriend, long time seen person. Dude, I bet it was fucking Kikania. I bet it was everyone I know, of course.
Dude, it felt like a fucking old DreamHack Twitch after party. It was such a trip. So it was like such a nostalgia trip. So you're catching up with people some of them I literally haven't seen in years. And then you got
mean back in the days before Semler, the DreamHack brand was owned by the government of Saudi Arabia. So, can you even imagine just doing esports going back in a time machine 10 years? They wouldn't believe any of the things we'd tell them. It'd be so bad, wouldn't it?
That is such a thing when you have one of those parties like this, though, is that you realize it's kind of this conversation that we keep touching back on, right? Where it's just, you know, did it get too big too fast? And what did you sacrifice by allowing it to get as big as it has? Because the fact that you then start having mono game events, i.e. you only do League of Legends at this event, you only do Counter-Strike at this event, you only do StarCraft at this event, means that you just lost that element of like the old DreamHack that made the DreamHack so important and so special, is that it brought all the different games together into one place, which meant that you got to meet all sorts of different people from all walks, and it was always so much fun, and just, you know, you stayed connected across like esports as a whole. Whereas then as the atomization happened and each game, you know, got big and then had their own events, and then it's just a standalone event. Or you got companies like Riot that says like, we will not have any other games at our event because it needs to be, you know, once that stuff started happening, you didn't realize what happened until it's like, oh yeah, no, it's just CS guys at these parties now. And it's just people you see all the time and you're not seeing and keeping in touch with anybody else from other games. So having that after party, having that New Year's party, it's like, I'm just saying it's an after party because it was wild. It was so much fun just talking to a bunch of different people, hanging around, horsing around, just like, it was just a good time, man. And it really did feel like a stepping back 6 years in time to when DreamHacks were still DreamHacks, and it was a good fucking time, and you were meeting a bunch of people. So already, like, terrific time, terrific end to the year and start to the year in that sense. But then, I'm in that boat right now where it's just like, I'm the least, maybe it's because of just like the storylines that are going on in the scene right now. I feel like we got robbed with Na'Vi last year. We got robbed with FaZe a little bit towards the end there. Well, robbed, like FaZe dropped off a little bit towards the end there. There's roster changes all over the place where it's like one player here, one player there, blah, blah. I don't really have a team that I'm like, oh, I really want to look forward to this team. Like, oh, you know, I'm really rooting for these guys the way that I was with FaZe at the beginning of last year. I was like, FaZe are going to do it. This is their year. And I was like all in 100%, you know, supporting them. Like, I don't really have that feel right now. And then from like a personal point of view as well, it's like, I'm not casting anything. I'm not working any live gigs. So it's like, we have the podcast. I have my stream in the morning, but apart from that, there isn't really anything going on right now. Any like big projects to like, dig into and get going.
Tease something here for fans and for you, which is, I can't say yet what specific events, because that has to be negotiated. It might be a sponsor thing where you have to get someone on board to pay for it all, et cetera. But essentially, if people saw in this company that produces this show, Last Free Nation, which also does games like League of Legends, is obviously the CSGO channel where they have the Hot Take Point Made and Snake and Banter and all that jazz on this channel, right? The company that we do it through, on the League of Legends side, if anyone knows anything outside of CSGO, we actually did a live event for Worlds. So what we had was Monty went to like the same venue actually as the Worlds finals, and he did like a live, it wasn't even a watch party, it was like a pre-game show with like, essentially it was like what you'd have like on the Super Bowl day if you watch like ESPN for 2 hours before the Super Bowl. Like, he built into it all, you have guests and all, right? Essentially, we will at some point do those types of live events for CSGO. So I can't say which events yet, but bearing in mind, like, the next majors in Europe, there'll be other, they'll kind of eat, take a long, probably not kind of eat, let's be real, it's too close, but there's big events in Europe. So all I'm saying is, there's a possibility in the future, I want to do it, that we do those things for CSGO. Like, maybe we have like a live thing where me and you are at like Cologne or something, and in like a different venue with people who just don't want to go to the actual venue and want to have a different answer. So there might be some, like, we might draw you back in a little bit, Mafia style. You're not fully out yet, so we'll lure you back in.
By the way, I mean, doing this show with you has been a blast, but it was a bit of that, you know, bringing me back in.
Yeah,
it is a bit of that. But I mean, dude, I mean, it's not.
Wouldn't that be cool to do? Wouldn't that be boring? Like, me, think about this. Awesome, think about too. We have mates, and we're going to work an event like Cologne. Imagine if we could just go do the final and then be at the venue and be to them like, look, when you finish, just come over for a drink or something. That'd be the shit. That would essentially like recreate a little bit what you're talking about as well at the beginning, right?
It's mainly about that, really, just trying to figure out like what that vibe is. Like that was a thing that I was playing around with earlier as well. It's like that, like this kind of thought, like coming out of the new year where you kind of ruminate and you kind of sit there and you kind of think over some things. Right. And then, you know, you kind of land on points that you hadn't really thought of before, but that, you know, that are there where there is also that kind of that thing, that vibe with like gaming 10 years ago, 12 years ago, like that whole vibe with like gaming, esports, all that, where it wasn't mainstream. It wasn't popular in the same way that it is today, where everybody kind of takes for granted, like, oh, gaming, everybody talks about gaming, everybody talks about esports. It's like, no, back then, fuck all people. Like, if you were interested, it's because it was like a passion project, like that you wanted to make happen. You were going to do it regardless. And it was all about, you know, being in the games and you know, it, kind of that escapism, but also being a part of something. There was that whole aspect to it, and it feels like now in the past few years that may have happened as well, where it's like it got too mainstream, it got too aspects that really attracted me to esports and kept me involved and really kept me like fully behind it, almost like identifying with it, like as an identity, as like, you know, I'm in esports. That's kind of something that feels like it's going away as well, because it's just Counter-Strike is so mainstream. And then, yeah, of course, if you follow like Richard's content or anything like that, you realize just how freaking bleak it is in the sense that now it's just, you know, massive money moving in, massive players moving in. It really is mainstream now in the way that, you know, other sports getting those kinds of investments are mainstream. Like, we really are there now. And so the whole kind of like, I don't know, the backing of the whole thing has changed to the point where there's also that aspect where it's like, you start asking questions like, what's keeping me here? It may also be like, there was also that kind of point where I was just thinking, and I wanted to ask you about this because this is like the esports historian kind of aspect of it, right? Where you will have had experience with this sort of thing, but it does feel weird to see all of these new players on these rosters who are, it's like the new generation, like a real new generation. Cause I'm just like, oh, how old is Dupree? You know, oh, boy, he can't be that old. And it's like 28 or 29.
I know what you mean. But you know what I mean? I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I was thinking, you have to realize, this is why, by the way, that I understand fans. You might at the moment love people like Fallen and the Imperial guys and think I'm wrong. history will bear me out as the correct one so fucking crazily much in the coming decades. Because what you guys forget is, guys, it's been now over 6 years since they won those majors with the Brazilian players. Like, that generation, it is ages ago now, Sam. It really is. Like, think about it. The Astralis Gold lineup was 2018, guys. They had some bleed over in 2019. That was over 3 years ago now. That was three or four. So, yeah, the point is, like, the other thing that's accelerated that, though, Sam, is the one thing that the online era did change forever for me is it took away, like, the grassroots progression through the scene. Like, Hedtrick's the best example ever. Yeah. Hedtrick is only in NIP right now for two reasons. One, because he's essentially following the same progression as Monacy, and they had Monacy in the Na'Vi Academy, and he looked fucking super sick. So anyone who wants an AWPer goes, Monacy was fucking amazing. Maybe I try to get my own Monacy. That was one reason. And then the other reason why is because the online era just cut out the entire Tier 2, Tier 3, Tier 4 scene. Tier 2 now is just a shit qualifier for the Tier 1 lands. And you can only go from, like, semi-pro to pro, and essentially, from, in my opinion, in CSGO, it's going to be a way more extreme version of what you're talking about. Because, yeah, maybe back in the day, you would every now and then get, like, one crazy... Like, the best example I would give, you remember when NIP brought in Pitt for 2016? But remember, he was, like, he wasn't on top teams before. He was on, like, you know, like, the lower teams. And that was kind of a gamble. They took him sort of out of nowhere. It's going to be like that every signing now, dude. So it's going to feel more extreme that people like Hedtrick, it's like they go from being, like, academy player to, like, now you're in a team that's supposed to be, like, minimum top 10. You're supposed to basically be good from day one. So if you look at that mixed with some of the other signings, that's just the way things are going now. And by the way, if anyone knows other games like League of Legends, this is actually a natural market response to the fact that salaries and buyouts are so crazy. Because what it encourages you eventually when you realize, wait a minute, if I buy three or four players over a few years and each one's costing me 250k, 500k, eventually, why don't I just invest that money in trying like 10 guys, like gamble essentially. Try this rookie, this rookie, this rookie. Did it not work? Well, I only paid him 2k anyway. Get him out, get the next one in. That'll become the new approach. Because in League of Legends, they got to this weird point that reminds me of CSGO now. You know how weird it is in CSGO, where if you can ES, the only options were playing a top team if they'll have you, or just become like a semi-pro. There's no in between. You couldn't go for Kenny and be like the 12th best team. You had to be so good or there. That's what League of Legends is like. In League of Legends, the worst spot to be in is to be a guy who was an MVP candidate 3 years ago, so you want good money still, but you're not actually top four or five anymore. That guy, by the way, just doesn't play in LEC right now. They literally, because what happens is the team that isn't going for the championship, like the team going for the championship ain't going to sign you because you're not the best anymore. So what happens is you hope like the old days, right? Well, whoever the next best is, like the fifth best team's going to sign me. No, because the fifth best team goes, wait a minute, if we're going to be like fifth anyway, why don't we just gamble on this rookie? If it works out, maybe we'll come third, but let's not overpay this old legacy yet. So actually, that vibe you're getting, that feeling, I think will only increase, mate. Because as I said, the guardians of the, they're all just being transitioned out the scene. Essentially, they're being forgotten about. Meanwhile, the newer guy, the difference is similar. Someone like a Hedtrick or a Modesty, you would know about him 4 years ago because he already would have like won a DreamHack Open, or he'd have been like MVP of some like smaller LAN, and you'd be like, whoa, one to watch there. Whereas now it's like they just come out of nowhere. And sometimes they're even really good, like the wonderful guy. You're like, holy shit, how's that possible? You can just replace someone, they're mega. So it's gonna have that weird vibe, in my opinion. It's not the same like sort of storyline, in my opinion, as the progression goes up.
It's a total roller coaster. I feel like you're going to get it out of the CIS region as well, because like you say, sure, if you're going to take these kinds of gambles, well, a dollar goes a whole lot
the
further
best one
in the
to go
CIS
for, yes,
region than in, the, than in,
yes,
Western Europe, right? So yes, you can gamble and have, you know, 5, 10, 15 guys in your academy system and just, you know, play it out, because what do you got to do? You got to pay him like $500 a month of salary. The kid's going to be overjoyed. He's probably making money on FPL or whatever if he's any good. And, you know, there you go. That's your overhead. Whereas if you're trying to do that, you know, here in Denmark for Astralis or something like that, you know, good fucking luck. That guy needs at least, you know, four times that before, you know, it starts getting competitive. So it is definitely like a weird thing looking at this, where it's just like, okay, now you have like this, you really do have this new generation of unknowns. You have the old generation that we came up with, or that I came up with at least, you know, that are getting phased out. You know, you got Forrest is streaming now, Olaf Meister is streaming now, you know, it's just like these guys are going to stream or retire. And yeah, no, it's a really weird thing, like to look at Astralis and then say, oh, you know, they got the four, and then Buzz. And you're like, who the fuck is that?
No, complete nobody. Yeah, again, remember, this for real, let's be real. This never could happen in the past. If we went back 5 years, yeah, it is impossible that a top five team, I mean, I know they're not now, but historically they're supposed to be top five Astralis. The idea you could sign a player that me and you, professionals who work in the city, have never seen play one game. That would be absurd. But now that's actually taken for granted. That happened quite often now, mate. Like, there's plenty of players coming you've never seen play a match before.
And
you, I mean, you have guys, this is what you highlighted as well with you know, Head Trick getting picked up by Nip. But, you know, I'm like, okay, hold on. I haven't seen him play in a while because, yes, he did play in Academy, and he also did stand in for Na'Vi that one time. So, okay, fair enough. You know, he has at least like one game of Studio Land experience, right? And then, unfortunately for WePlay, that's also taken a big step back due to what's going on in Kiev. So it's like you're not having that Studio Land experience there that other Academy teams have had in the past, like with the Mouse Academy that dominated for four or five seasons. So, I mean, he really is just living in this online space. So, man, you know, there's like layers to this now, because like you point out, you would have at least had some tier two or tier three LAN experience. You'd have had your Copenhagen games. You'd have had your DreamHack LANs. You know, you'd have had some LAN experience.
But it's weird. Here's two calls that came up the last few years. Everyone knows. So there's the guys from now Virtus Pro, but you know, the guys who were at Vanguard. And then obviously there was the guys in Furia. Those are two of the calls that came through the last years of the LANs before online, right? What people don't know is this similar. You can actually go back, and if you go back, they were already playing DreamHack Opens and smaller lands and smaller. So you actually could already know who they are, like I'm saying. But that almost doesn't exist now, it feels like.
No, it really is just going to be straight from online into it, and that may very well. But like, what I'm curious about, actually, dude, is given how things look like they're going to be going economically for the next couple of years. I mean, is it a bad thing in the sense that
if you can shift
a lot of the game and the formation online?
Yeah, seems obvious to me, mate.
Yeah, that's even something.
They were hinting at, if you remember, during the online era, ESL kind of, they didn't go through with it, but they tried to hint in the first year of the online play, like 2021, they tried to hint that they were even maybe going to do like a hybrid circuit, like you're talking about, like maybe most of it's half online and then half online. And the joke is, economically, that might end up making sense. Maybe we have to go back to halfway between the online era just to make economically work if all the budgets get slashed, right?
Well, that's one of the news items that dropped this year, and that's what you kind of expect. You know, what are the tournament circuits going to look like? Pro League, we know what Pro League and ESL. You know, they've made a big deal out of their year, which is, you know, fairly spread out, restructuring Pro League, all of that. But Blast also came out with their announcement for what their year is going to look like, and it's the same format. If anybody's wondering, they're not reinventing the wheel or anything. It's spring groups, spring showdown, spring final, fall groups, fall showdown, fall final, and then world final, right? But this is why it comes to mind, is that they are already making that adjustment. They've put the spring showdown and the fall final and the fall showdowns as online events. So not even using the studio environment that they have in Copenhagen in Denmark, where they could bring teams in and at least cut costs because it's not an arena event. They could just call it a studio event and cover that. They're not even going that far anymore. They are going to take that step back and fully hybridize, where they're actually going to have like a three-tier kind of approach going, where it's going to be in studio for the groups, it'll be online for the showdown, and then the final will be an arena event.
Isn't that the same, though? They had the showdown online last year, too.
Did they?
Yes.
What?
Because if you remember, that's why when Vitality lost, it was like slightly shocking, but no one went on about that much, you know.
Why did I just completely eliminate that?
I think it's a couple of years ago they used to. No, I think the showdown was always online, actually, dude. I think
was it?
I think it was. Because I remember we did it online the year that we worked with them, 2020.
Even when I was casting it, they were.
The problem with that, though, Assembly, is I know why you're confused. That's because that was the first event for Blast that we had to go online with. So maybe you thought it was just because of the online era. But actually, since then, they kept doing that online even when they went back to LAN. That is true.
It made. Yeah, no, it may very well be that I'm getting completely confused on this, because I've even casted showdowns, but then the players aren't around. Oh, dude, it's such all a right. weird. But regardless, point still stands in that they have a hybrid model that they're still exercising. Yeah, yeah. So they could actually cut some more costs.
As you're saying, I'll spin it this way. The fact that now, in theory, everything is on LAN, but they don't say, great news for 2023, we're going to LAN for the showdown, plays into the point you're making, which is when you've got something that just makes more sense to make your margins work, why would you then spend the money to make it on LAN? Like, it actually makes sense they do it online, because it's already been online, so people accept it's going to be online. And it's a qualifier for the LAN anyway, so people also feel like it's just an online qualifier. And then, like I say, why spend the money? Why fly them in? I mean, look, I would do it because I want the results to be better. But that's not that, like, everyone's losing money out the ass in esports, guys. Like, that can't be their number one priority if you're a businessman, I'm afraid. Like, that's the thing I would do, but I'd be giving up the money to do that, wouldn't I? They're not going to do that. They're all losing money.
Well, it's, I mean, it feels like we're going to see this kind of like squeeze on the entire industry. I think, you know, they're really going to be looking at how to reorganize. And, you know, if I'm sitting here thinking from a commentator point of view, I'm thinking there may be some house cleaning on the commentary side as well, because why, you know, one of the hardest things to justify in terms of cost is commentators, in terms of, like, you know, the high tier one commentators and what they charge on a day to day, when you can get a Harry and Hugo who, you know, will cost less, right? And then you can even go so far down. You can even go down to the guys who are still, you know, fighting to get up and who are willing to undercut every chance that they can get to get a chance at coming in, even though they don't realize that that's hurting them in the long run. If you're a tournament organizer, you could be looking at those guys too and just saying, like, maybe it's a time for a tap on the shoulder there. If it really does get down to the squeeze, I mean, we could see all sorts of restructuring going on where costs are going to be looking to get cut every which way, and it's going to come down to whether or not people can adjust to that or not.
Do you know the point that Semler, and not, sorry, Anders always used to make? It was actually a long time point of Anders behind the scenes, but it was a very apt point. His point always was, we don't actually have access to the raw data behind the scenes from the TOs. So none of us really can actually even justify whether we are number one or whether we are the one you should hire instead. Or we also don't know, this is real, guys, we don't even actually know what impact having commentators has on the game. Like, we don't actually understand if having Scrawny and Lawners, who Blast consider the best, brings that many more viewers or any viewers to having Harry and Hugo. And unfortunately for me, in my opinion, if we don't have that information, it means we can't ever, like, make a hard play. And my sense actually is it probably doesn't have as big an impact. Like, I think it has a qualitative impact. Like, I will think the casting is worse, but I actually think eventually, Semler, I think some of the TOs aren't even actually cynical enough. I think some of them are going to realize, wait a minute, if I build you up, but then you become, like, we're number one and we charge the biggest rate, then I'm not hiring you next time. I'll take someone else and build them up. Like, because as you're saying, why don't I just drop down to the fourth person? He knows, because he's fourth in line, by the way. He has to give me a discount, and I just save some money. And 99%. The same viewers turn up, watch the game, and don't even know the difference. And even, I'll add in, the added benefit, and this is sad if you're a commentator, is because I don't hire you and I hire the fourth best guy, there's even a cross section of the fan base will assume I hired the number one guy. It even works, like, sort of symbiotically with your fucked up, cynical, margin crushing approach.
No, but it's not even, I mean, dude, it's not even cynical in the sense that
it's
purely practical. And it's definitely a conversation that I've had in the past where you're doing negotiations. And this is only going to become more of a thing now as the scene is tightening up and it's getting down to ESL and Blast. As a commentator, it's going to be grim if you are one of the commentators who's really trying to work his way up, or you're a commentator that existed at the top. Really, in commentator in general in Counter-Strike is going to get really tight, because if you're not good with ESL and if you're not good with a Blast, you're not really working. So, and they know that. So now one of the ways that we were able to grow day rates in the past was that, hey, if you have a variety of tournament organizers, some of them even overlapping, all of a sudden you have a way to negotiate. You have to say, you can say, like, hey, this TO is willing to pay me this much. Are you willing to match that? Or are you willing to go above? You can come up with different ways to negotiate to actually get the day rate to go up until you kind of hit that sweet spot of where the market will bear it. And then you go from there. But now if you only have ESL and if you only have Blast, that's it. What you're gonna go, and they're basically interchangeable now as well, especially with talent. They're using the same talent. They have the same teams. They're pretty much side by side in the calendar. There's no real telling them apart. So if you're in that sort of situation as a commentator, man, it's going to get really interesting, because it's going to get interesting in a not so fun kind of way, because now you're losing tools that you could have for negotiating, and you have guys who are willing to come up and who will do anything to get that chance, and TOs know it. Absolutely, TOs know it. And TOs themselves, there is no, like you say, based on conversations I've had in the past with organizers, there is no metric to go off of to judge a commentator's worth, apart from whether or not you're popular on Reddit, which is why you see commentators bending over backwards.
Reddit did rule the day for tournament.
Bending over backwards to try and please the social media group on Reddit and Twitter and all of that, is because that's literally the only thing producers and tournament organizers have to go off of to judge your value. So it really puts you in a weird place as a commentator, because it turns into like some kind of popularity contest, and you don't really have any real way to judge like what you're doing, because you can't really like tell more jokes. Like, what do you do? You know, it's like more analysis, more jokes that appeals to somebody. Should I talk more? Oh, no, I'm talking too much. Should I talk less? Now I'm not. It's like you got nothing to go off of to really judge, apart from just like whether or not people decide that you're good this day or not. It's arbitrary almost. So yeah, no, it's going to be really rough, I think, for the commentators in particular, veterans and young and up and comers alike. Because for up and comers, they're not really going to have many tools to up their day rate. So they're going to kind of be just staying where they're at, whatever they can get to. That's probably where they're going to plateau. And then if you're one of the older commentators, one of the veteran hands, who can, like those tier one players you're talking about, who've been around a bit, but maybe not at the peak, maybe, you know, like there's a popular pair that's coming up or something like that. How are you going to justify them paying you top rate without having to succumb to dropping your rate a little bit? So yeah, dude,
as an aside, just because this will tilt all the right people, right? This is why, if you're one of those people who for the last, let's say, 7-8 years has been on Reddit trying to shit on me, like every talent announcement I'm not in, you're like, lol, glad Thorin isn't there. Every time I'm at an event and I make a comment, you're like, he should be fired, I'm professional. You think you've been actually petitioning for me to lose my job? You fucking mark. You're literally the main reason why tomorrow I could work with ESL or Blast, literally. Because what the joke is this, when the TO sees that comment, he doesn't go, oh no, we better get rid of this guy. He goes, wait a minute. If they hated this guy and didn't care, they just wouldn't watch the stream. You mean they're watching and they're emotionally engaged with what he's saying, and they're now taking the discussion to a separate place. Now, dude, that's their wet dream. Like, I've always said this. The actual worst thing that happened to my casting career / talent career wasn't anything to do with, like, drama. It was actually just when they banned having those odd shot clips on the front page of Twitch. On Reddit, rather. Because remember, dude, when we used to do an event in, like, 2015... half the clips, I'm not joking, fans, were just my comedic jokes. It was like, this Thorin says Zeus is trash. Wow, Smith's joke about hopping. Dude, we used to just dominate that shit. And that's why that was, like I was saying, when that was the only metric, are you, like, relevant, essentially? We used to be, like, nobody could beat us. Because at that point in time, Launders, by the way, at the time was competing for my job, like, analyst. He's a great analyst, but he didn't have the charisma, did he? He didn't have the persona. So he was never going to get over me in that scenario. So that's actually the biggest difference, I think, in how talent is now. Now, essentially, it's the other way around. It feels like talent's more like you are just, you're just a conveyor belt. It's like, right, we need this caster, and then we need another caster, and then another duo for the talent, and then we need like a whole, and you're just inserting cocky cutter people. You're not picking like, yes, that. We need Richard Lewis, and we'll have Thorin, and we'll have maybe Yanko. You're not doing it like that. It's like, to me, it's way more of an assembly line approach now to talent. And even the talent themselves, partly because they've done every event and cocked themselves, but also because they play into that. Even when you have different talent, the event still feels the same to me. Everyone does the same fucking pregame. Everyone does the same style. There's very little actual, like, everything's homogenous to me now in esports.
Yes.
You know,
that is 100. Like, that was why, one of those things, if I'm Launders and Scrawny, like, I wouldn't have done the Rio major, for example. You know, would have held out for the Paris major. You work with Blast. You're Blast's flagship commentators. Why do not? Why? Well, I mean, you could come at it from Launders and Scrawny's side of things, where they want to do all the majors. But if I'm Blast and I want to have something that'll keep me apart, then it is, you know, okay, like, that's at least one thing that I can have, is commentators that are unique, regardless of our previous argument of whether or not you can judge, you know, how much of a draw a commentator is. In this case, it's just about Launders and Scrawny. You only see them on Blast, so having that, you know, could very well be a way for you to differentiate yourself from ESL, because it's the same teams, it's pretty much the same format. I mean, like, you're pretty much same with ESL. The only thing you got that ESL can't steal, because ESL steal all your graphics ideas and your breaks ideas and all of that anyways, right? All your content they take as soon as Blast comes up with something, you know, the ESL just take it right behind them. So the only thing you can really do is try and have some kind of exclusivity with your commentators, and then nothing. Now you don't even have that. You don't even have that to stand on. So yes, no, ESL keeps Blast around, to kind of like Microsoft kept Apple around, so that you can't sue them for antitrust or whatever, for like having a monopoly. But other than that, you really can't tell the difference between the two TOs now. So.
Way that is for real the only reason I think the current dynamic exists. That's why I always give that example of the antitrust example. Essentially, as far as I can tell, I think the only reason that the people who bought ESL don't just go, let's complete it, just buy Blast and own Counter-Strike, is because exactly what I just said, colloquially, the image would be Saudis own Counter-Strike, and that's one thing Valve will never allow it. So what you have to do is Blast allows you to maintain plausible deniability and be like, no, ESL's just, you know, just the main player in a scene where they have to negotiate with others. It's like, do they fuck, mate? Like, they get their way every time. Like, look, ESL just gets their part of the calendar, and then Blast has to go, no, it's fine. I'll just have, like, my group stage here, and then, like, 2 months later, when no one gives a fuck or remembers why, I'll just do my LAN finals, and then everyone on Reddit, to prove that my format doesn't work, will say things like, but why is OG here? They're not even good. Because 2 months ago on a land, they bloody get through, you idiot. Everyone forgets it. So the joke is like, I don't even get what Blast gets out of this negotiation. Like, for real, I actually think Blast is the stupidest part. Are you ready? Here's a fucking quote that'll be on Play GG and on the fucking title of the VOD. I think Blast is the stupidest operator in CSGO, and here's why. Because they are the only people, aside from Flashpoint, who actually could have said, I am going to stand my ground once and for all and fight ESL here instead of slowly bleeding out and becoming a bitch-made vassal of ESL. And instead, they actually chose, no joke, let's just slowly bleed out and become a shitty vassal of ESL. Like, I don't know why they chose that summer, because in my opinion, they had, I'll tie it all in together, they had talent they'd built up that at the time did not work with ESL. There's an exclusive element. They had the best broadcast that everyone said 2 years ago and to this day, best broadcast. And they had like lots of good teams. They had all the big teams you'd want pretty much. They took that and didn't even try to battle them, dude. They just, every time they were, basically for me, the problem with Blast is it's another bunch of ESIC people. It's a bunch of people like, look, we don't have to fight. Can't we all just get along? I'll tell you what happens when someone reasonable goes, do we have to fight? Can't we get along? Everyone who's reasonable goes, yeah. And then the unreasonable guy goes, no, things my way. And then you go, well, better get along and give him some of what he wants. And then eventually at the end, he just gets what he wants anyway. That's how the world operates. So like, it's why, if you don't know, when people go on those tangents of like, why do we have to have war? Because if one person wants one, he wins, you moron. Like, do you not understand the premise that you can't convince everyone to think the same thing? So to bring it back to Blast, like, I actually think, dude, for real, this year is going to be like the end for them, essentially. Because even though they're going to have a major and they're going to run the same circuit again, what's going to be different? Like, how do they solve the problem we all noticed at the end of last year, which is, A, Blast World Finals doesn't even feel like their biggest event. It is always cocked by the Copenhagen Fall Finals. That feels like the true end of the Blast circuit. And then B, why do events like even Fall Finals and World Finals feel nothing like a Kelowna or a Katowice? Those are problems for Blast to solve, mate. And so in my opinion, I don't really know how they make up the ground with ESL. If anything, I think ESL just keeps whittling them down. Especially because, as we're saying, we'll tie it all in. ESL's load over the commentators with the major. Then they had them Kelowna. Like, they've done it all. Like Blast is just the nice guys who were going to slow lose the game by being too reasonable. I think that for real, 2 years ago, the online era, by the way, would have been perfect. They would have killed everyone with their online production. They were shitting on ESL at the time. Remember, dude, in 2020, their production was way better. And on top of that, they had like the best talent set. That was when like ESL brought back in that weird one where like Harry and Hugo did it for cheap. Yeah, I'm gonna say it, motherfucker, dispute me publicly if you want. They did it for cheap, which meant you didn't have the best commentators commentate the game. And then who were the fucking analysts? It was bloody Janko and Cassard. But back when people actually were hated on Janko and Cassard, because Janko had been a coach and failed, and then Cassard, people just didn't like Cassard back then for some weird reason, whatever. Yeah true. They also didn't have, he hadn't established himself. So the joke is, that was the moment where if you were going to battle him, you battle him then. Now it's just too late now. You've already lost like 4 battles in the war, you know. Like, yeah, I feel it for Blast. It's a great product, but I just don't know where they win. What's a win for them? What's the off-ramp that makes them number one? There's an offer as far as I can tell, right? What do they do?
I don't even, you know, it's like, what, come up with a new UI?
Yeah, dude, it's almost on that level because they've given up every other advantage. They had everything. Like, they actually had the UI.
They have the best UI already, though. You can't really improve on it.
No, I agree. I think it's, like, by the way, I've mentioned this many times before, but that's one area I think I have an eye that other people don't. I've told the fucking Flashpoint people for event one, can we please have the radar like they do? No one does the radar like Blast. Every other TO still does it where I have to go number 6. Oh, shit. Oh, it's broken. Oh, too late. He's already dead. Like, what is that? That's the least intuitive shit of all time, guys.
Dude, do you remember that shit? And even that, oh, man. It's and then it randomizes. Remember when it wasn't in the same order? Like, it wasn't easy to tell. So you, as a commentator, this is one of those things from like way back where it's like, as a commentator, you had to go off of that. You had the numbers, yes, on the minimap, and you had the players in the order. And every map at the beginning of the map, you pretty much had to memorize what order they were, so you could like quickly glance and get it right and just say, okay, number 2 is this guy, blah, blah, blah. Like, you would just know because it rearranged every time. So,
oh, is it like based on the order you joined the server or something stupid?
Yeah.
Like,
so, right. So every time, right, it was a different order. So at the beginning of every map, you had to like just click your brain into like copy paste mode and be like, copy paste, okay, there we go, good, and get it right again. It was one of those you know, skills of a commentator that you had to develop over time. Bar's pretty low for commentary, but dude, I mean, it is just one of those details where you shouldn't be doing that as a viewer these days. There has to be a better way to do it, and Blast did find a solution in that case, right? I mean, granted, you still have to know what the player's face looks like, but still, you know, it's
I feel like it's so intuitive. Yeah. Like that's the one, the difference is after you watch Blast a few times, you don't even think anymore. It becomes intuitive, you know?
Yeah. No, Blast are still, they're still cutting edge. And the thing is that they will always be the innovators and ESL will always be the ones.
Oh, for sure.
Yes. That's just the way that it, that's just the way that it works. But I don't know if that's enough because now it's like the gap used to be 6 months with ESL catching up. Now the gap is like one event. ESL have clued on real quick and they're like, okay, cool. That worked. We're going to do the same thing. And because we can't, we control the calendar, you know, for the next 2 to 3 weeks or whatever, we can do that sort of thing. We can make that kind of pivot. So it really is like Blast the R&D department for ESL. Going forward, and I don't really see how they continue. It could very well be that 2024 is ESL just sticking around because ESL, what do they care about money now? You know, they're good. They should be recession proof at this point now.
I mean, essentially, $1.5 billion. We've discussed this in the past. I actually genuinely believe the whole point of buying ESL, if you're the Saudis, is just esports washing. So actually, at this point, you don't think of it as I'm losing money. You think of it as it's marketing. I'm marketing. I'm awesome. So actually, you're willing to lose the money. So I agree with you. I think ESL's the only one that sort of, essentially doesn't sort of have someone breathing down their neck like, you're fired if you don't get these up. Like, I think they can just chill. Meanwhile, we've seen Blast still seem like they're fucking sprawling for anyone. Please give, throw a life preserver in. They're just trying to get out, aren't they?
I was kind of trying to think about that in terms of the price today for the tickets as well for the major. I think that was something that was talked about where
it was like somebody was like trying to break down
the math and, you know, like how much the tickets are going to go for. And it's like 35, 40 euros a day or something like that for tickets for the venue. But I'm still just sitting there going, that's too little.
Yeah, that's too little. So people don't get it. If you're a fan, the mistake people always make is what every idiot does in the world. You just compare it to sports. A football match lasts 90 minutes plus halftime plus a little bit of pregame, like let's say 3 hours. The 35 euros you're paying to go to this major, you're going to get, I'm going to guess, like 8, 9, 10 hours of actual live. And it's it. That is insane. That's like if instead you went to the football match and 5 games happened. Like, and by the way, spoiler, the football match cost hundreds and hundreds of euros in comparison. Because, you know, that's one thing that fans do in the modern day where they sort of, they just judge it and go, what a ripoff. It's like, the joke is we're not paying enough. It's a bit like that story. You know, yes. Every time a team like a G2 brings out a new jersey, fans always click it and go, look at the bloody ship in there. It's like 20. Yeah, because it's not in TK Maxx at your fucking city, you moron. There haven't been other components that took care of some of the costs of that. So they're shipping it from their headquarters or like a depot to your house. So you know what's great, guys? You know when that jersey costs 40 euros plus 20 euros shipping and you go, where a rip off? They make fuck all money off those, you moron. It barely even justifies itself. The joke is everyone in esports thinks this is overpriced. It's underpriced. Like this is even something we had the other day on the Four Horsemen. When I was talking on the Four Horsemen, we had Tommy on as our guest because obviously he's like, it was about finance in the industry and obviously he's like the expert on that. If people don't know, he literally used to work for literally JP Morgan in London as an investment banker. Right? He knows loads about finance. I was even saying to him, the joke is people like me and him, because we've had money now for like 5, 10 years, we actually like, we are that meme of like, please take my money. It's like, I want to pay for one pass that gives me the Blast ESL pass that I get all the shit online. I always have a good connect. I would pay tomorrow for that. I already do it in the NFL, the NHL, the fucking NBA. I love all those passes because the tech's all there. It's amazing. But in esports, no fucker will pay. So unfortunately, we're still behind on all that shit. We're so far behind. And people, like I say, they have the gall to think you're being ripped off. It's the other way around. Are you ready for a great statement? We, the fans of Counter-Strike and esports, are essentially, yeah, they're doing it to themselves. But effectively, we're ripping all the other companies off. We're getting them to give us enormous, like, giant events and stadiums, production. And then at the end, they just go, they have it for free. Just watch an ad. And then what do? Watch an ad.
Block.
Get me an ad block now. That's what esports people are like. We're just so rancid, it's unreal, isn't it?
it's still a miracle to see like that these organizations have survived at all.
It's wild,
the cost involved. And that is the thing. It's like, do you think that if given the choice, is Blast going to Abu Dhabi for their fucking world final? Absolutely not. But Abu Dhabi is probably comping every single cost. Oh, they're probably not paying anything to run that event in that area. So free event essentially as far as Blast is concerned, apart from obviously some of the costs on their side that they have to cover, but probably most of it is getting covered. It's the same thing here in Paris. It has to be for them to be offering this event at that price. it has to be so heavily comped by like the tourism board of Paris to try and get some people to come into that shithole city. Like they have to do something to get people there. And so they must be paying through the nose to cover costs for Blast, especially given how much it must cost to rent a stadium arena. It's like you say, you know, it's like a football match. You're running the thing. I mean, that, you know, it's going full bore for like 3 hours or something like that. Right. And then the studio, you know, then the stadium kind of winds down and then costs become reasonable. Dude, if a full day of esports goes for like 8, 9, 10 hours or whatever, the whole thing running full bore, I don't even want to imagine what the fucking energy bill like cost, yeah. Let alone security and all the other shit that you got to do, you know, to make an event run. Like the costs are enormous running these events. So I mean, I'm still wondering just how much, you know, because remember we learned recently how much these organizers are making when they run the major. You know, when PGL came out and said that they turn a profit when they run a major now, whereas before it was just cost. I mean, granted, the obvious jokes were made that they're operating most of the time out of Romania, so they can cut a lot of
joke
costs
with
there.
I'll say it right now, I don't work with anyone who gives a fuck. The joke with the PGL one, when they dare to do that joke. I remember way back in the day, someone at some stand-up comedian, I can't remember who it might be, Doug Stanhope, Bill Burr, one of the Louis CK, one of that vein, right? He had a joke where he was like, everyone talks about how, like, you know, like aliens must have built the pyramids. He's like, you're underestimating how much you can do with an enormous captive slave army. Like, his point was right. It's like the joke is like, what a great business. Like, yeah, you just make a guy work to death without paying him. Like, you can do a lot of things. Like, if I actually have to have unions and fucking pay people money, it's gonna be a bit harder for me to compete. Because I agree, the reason I don't care about that PGL angle is this. Even ESL, who's cynical as fuck and has outsourced everything to fucking Katowice and all sorts of shit like that, even they will still have like one guy doing one job. I'm sorry, I've seen PGL events too many times now. They are the one where it's like there's one guy who just finished, by the way, marathoning a Dota event. He had like 2 days off, and his job is now to do two humans' jobs simultaneously on a live broadcast. And if they fail, then they just sort of like, the joke is it's like an old monitor. You just slap him harder and then hope he fixes it, you know. Like, that's how they fucking run those events, guys. Like, so I don't want to hear them like, you know, I've cut all the margins. Like, yeah, no wonder, cocksucker. How about putting that money back in and making the product better? Because that's the thing. If that was Blast who said that, who have the best production, I'd be like, wow, we should listen to them. They've managed to get the best production. They've got all margins that work. If PGL does it, it's like I said, it's like, well, no shit. Yeah, it turns out, yeah, Romanian people will work for nothing, apparently. I don't know. Fucking hell.
No, apparently, it's like, apparently, he even overpays. Like, they pay twice the average salary or something.
Oh, really?
So like,
fucking hell.
By Romanian standards, they're still paying good money. Fair except point. That by Western,
it's
you know.
Still
like,
fuck all, right?
It's still mega, mega competitive, right? If you compare it to anywhere else in the West, makes like sense. Sweden or France or Belgium or anything like that, forget it. But in Romania, you know, it's like you can pay very competitive rates and still be way ahead of the competition. So, you know, I mean, PGL, we're not going to talk about PGL doing PGL things. Well, I mean, who
you
knows?
You guys
PGL
are wondering.
It
might seem weird to you guys because we were in Romania, obviously, only just a year ago and we were doing the major, right? So you might think, how can Thorin be that out of touch? You have to understand, guys, I don't eat peasant food like you. I live good. So to me, I wasn't sure where the pricing was at. I was still having a great life. Don't worry about it. By the way, food in Romania, just like all those other, like, Balkan-related fire as well. If you just like cooked great. Meat, basically, it's the shit. They've got all the best stuff there, all the best stuff, mate. It's fire.
Yeah,
just go,
it was great.
Go, basically, you just, in Romania, you don't have to go somewhere good. You just go to one of those places that's like a bar slash serves food at the same time. You go there and you just get like a mixed grill. It's fucking mega, I'm telling you. It's same with Serbia. All those countries are the shit for that sort of food, I'm telling you. It's the fucking shit.
Oh, no, dude. Fucking A. Straight, like, just so good. And, yeah, no, it was. I mean, it was a good event, man. I remember it was a good event. It was well run and all that.
Well, you need to know, guys, as well as this.
It's when Sato missed his flight. The first domino that fell when Sato was not on that plane to Stockholm. And then, of course, we all know how that played out afterwards. But
so here's how you know that I have actually tapped into some mad luck in my last few events. Because when I went to that event in Romania, obviously everyone's bitching because we weren't in Sweden. We had to initially be in Romania. When I arrived, Semler, at like the little apartment thing I was staying in, I remember, unironically, 50 meters from my door was a Korean barbecue. What's the chance? And it was good. I actually went there like five
times.
It was good,
dude. We went. It was great.
It was legit, wasn't it? Yeah.
I went again. I think I went again. Like we went, and then I went again with Moses. Like, dude, that Korean barbecue joint.
It's good.
Yeah, they were getting. We were going all in on that place.
I don't really know what a Korean person is doing living in Romania, but that's for them to worry about. That backstory, I don't need to see the prequel. You know.
What is it like? All Asians look alike? No, but it is definitely like. I wasn't really sure. You know, it's that sort of situation where it's just like, you know, Korean.
Or, you know, like, is it a career?
To be fair, there are actually times in the West.
It's just got the concept.
Well, sometimes that is awkward, by the way.
Serve the food in a certain way.
Put it this way, I have had times that were really awkward in the West, where if I go to a good Korean barbecue, sometimes I'll try and say things to them in Korean when they come after the meal. And sometimes you find out, even though it's a Korean barbecue, actually that waitress, A, is like ethnically Chinese, and B, doesn't know Korean anyway. Exactly. You know what I mean? So that actually happens more often than you realize. Like, I've been sort of wrecked myself by that, because I can tell they sort of glaze over, like, I thought, what? Or if I try ordering by their Korean name, they're just like, you mean the grilled ribs? Like, oh shit, they're not Korean. Yeah, I just realized that last second, unfortunately. That has happened to me a few times.
That is what happens, dude. Well, I mean, there are that's the thing. We don't really have
any, we can do some rosters if you want. This would be some roster moves, right?
No, okay. But I mean, I guess what we could talk about, since we were already on the topic of Blast for a little bit as well, you know, like talking about the schedule and all that. But we could actually talk about this RMR news, because something that's actually dropped recently. They just had that big, press event in the Eiffel Tower in Paris. You know, actually pretty cool. It looked nice. That was nice. We didn't get a stream though, sadly. So I was a little bit sad. We did that. Flashpoint had a streamed, you know.
That was weird, wasn't it? Because here's what's weird about that, if people don't know. They had all these enormous figures in esports, A, attending, and B, advertising. Like, if people don't know, I've made this public a bunch of times because I'm trying to make it, will it into existence. Good news, guys. They had fucking Law from the LEC at this press conference. I'm hoping that means she's going to be at the event. Shox was there because he's got that project that ties into it. Fucking Zimu was there. Who else was there? There was a couple of other names, right? Wasn't there a couple of other famous people as well?
Shox. There was Shox and Apex.
Apex.
There was Zewu. There was, Lore. Past that, I mean, some journalists. Past that, I'm not really sure. That's
still
issue.
Pretty like, big names in French esports, if you know. They're enormous names, yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. And I mean, there is definitely, we're definitely going to be touching on that, the Shoxi roster that's going to be making plays. I think you saw the news talking about new players and new names. I mean, but already we can already talk briefly about this, i.e. American RMR is going to be hosted in Monterrey, Mexico. Asian RMR is going to be in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, and then European RMR is going to be happening in Copenhagen, Denmark. So already, I mean, that is solid. Copenhagen, Denmark, Blast home turf. They're going to run it out of their studio. It's going to be perfect. They've got everything, you know, on skates there. It's all good. No worries there. As far as Ulaanbaatar is concerned, running events out of Mongolia, I mean, if it's going to be a LAN, what do you care about internet connection? You could run it anywhere at that point. So long as you can have decent facilities to actually run it, that's going to be pretty slick for that scene. And that's going to be something cool to look forward to, and also should be easier to travel to and all that sort of thing for those guys for that region. The Monterrey one, I'm just sitting here thinking it has to be due to visas, because it's still tricky to get in and out of the United States with visas. You may still get players getting hung up, you know, coming from Brazil or South America or something like that, you know, get hung up trying to get in to the United States. And so I think that Monterrey, like Mexico, does seem to be becoming one of the hubs for esports in North America because of the visa issues, because it's so difficult to stay in the United States long term, to compete in the United States, all of that. So you could just set up just south of the border, easy to travel to, still the same travel distance, and run an event there. I mean, other tournament organizers have done it in the past. Face It ran an event at Cancun, that sort of thing, right? So,
let's be real, especially if you do actually have the event like Face It did for that ECS in Cancun. Also, the players aren't going to complain. It's like a bloody holiday.
Yeah,
everyone
was
loving that event when they had it, of course.
Yeah. No, so I mean, I reckon that actually could be that could actually be a really good solution, especially because Mexico, again, cutting costs. I mean, it can't cost much to run an event out of Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, and it probably can't cost too much running an event out of Monterrey, Mexico. So, you know, like, and then you're going to have everything, you know, everything is going to cost a bunch running it in Denmark, but then it all probably balances out at the end, you know, it all kind of works out. So I think, again, this is Blast really trying to be clever with how they're executing things and, you know, balancing cost and all that. But this could actually turn out really nice. This could actually turn out really well. And there's no room for complaint in a sense, the same way that, you know, the way that happened last time with ESL, where they were hosting the North American qualifier here in Stockholm. You know, it's like, why are they doing that? Well, now, you know, North America is going to be on the continent. Asia's going to be there, and then Europe. It's all squeaky clean, and there shouldn't be any hangups on that side of things. So good on them there. The other thing that came out, though, and I think this is why, you know, the point that you made about Lore hosting, I think could actually work out, because according to Nicholas, you know, the head creative officer for Blast, you know, that they've done
just nonstop polling, trying to figure out whether it's not whether it's better to do French commentary or English commentary. And apparently, it was always split down the middle. So they've decided that they're going to do English commentary in the arena, but that they're going to dual host. So they're going to have French hosting as well as English hosting. And so I think that's where you can get Laura involved.
By the way, as an aside, if people don't know, Semler obviously is like part French, speaks French, has been to France many, many times, etc. One thing I would ask you about is, do you think that implies there's actually a cultural change maybe because of the internet? Because if people don't know, it's not a stereotype. If you go to France, even today, and you go into like a bakery or something, look, if they want your money, they might be polite, but like essentially they will not want to speak to you in English. They will not like the fact you don't speak French. Like they want you at least to sort of try. Like that is actually a cultural thing that I definitely, every time I'd been there, it was real bit. So actually that implies almost like maybe the newer generation doesn't mind as much.
I have one of those, I have one of those memories that's like seared into my mind because my mom is American, but we were in France visiting family and all that. And we were out shopping. I can't remember what. And like, it's seared into my mind because my mom understands French and she speaks basic French, but she has a, you know, American accent, right, when she speaks it. And she was trying to communicate with this guy behind the counter, and he was just being the biggest prick on
being
the planet.
Snooty.
Just fucking mocking her, like just straight up mocking her. Like,
oh, that's the worst part. So it's like, it's not even just that they're outraged; they're always condescending, like you said. Oh, dude, it's like they actually insult your feelings.
Condescension just oozing out of this guy, and I was just like, holy shit. But I was like a kid back then, what the fuck am I gonna do? So right. But I remember it today where it's just like, man, like I can't imagine treating somebody else who was making the effort. You know, it's like she was making the effort to try and speak to him in his language, and all he could think to do was to mock her because I guess what, she came from America and she was trying to speak French and she sounded funny. It was just, that is the French mind. That said, I do think that it is a change now where the younger generation that basically live online, this is globalization for you. You know, it's like the you know, you live online, English is the default language. Even in France, I think, you know, they're going to be moving in that direction. And then I think it would be utterly stupid to run a major event like that, a world championship in essence, right in the heart of Europe. I mean, France is easy to get to from a lot of different places. Come on. Like, I think it would be ridiculous to host it in French in Paris.
Dude,
like,
you
have to do it.
That actually does seem like it's a ubiquitous phenomenon culturally online, as you say, that like everyone's just like, the joke is everyone's like a shit version of an American if they're online and they're young, right? Because I've even heard stories for real, Semler, that in like multinational teams, sometimes you get multinational teams where there are two players from the same country, and then they'll be at events and they'll just notice like, wait a minute, we've just been talking to each other only like in English for the last 20, why don't we just talk in our like Danish or something, you know, like I've heard that does happen. Like actually, like people even get out of speaking their own language themselves, like, oh shit, wait a minute. Why was I talking? You know, exactly. I mean, that's the thing.
It's very much, especially if I get that all the time here in Sweden, where it's like I'm really trying to learn Swedish now, and I try to speak to people, but they're wired in the way where it's just like, oh, he's struggling with Swedish, let's just switch to English. We all speak English, you know. And I'm like, no, but I really want
to
like.
It's why Swedish. It's so hard for me to speak Dutch, man, because they automatically do that instantly.
Yeah, you know? They just switch over, and it's not them being rude. I
mean,
no,
the joke is they don't want to help me. They want to just get this transaction done.
Exactly. But they also want to practice their English.
Sure.
Into with Swedes is that they want to practice their English too, and so they're just like, oh, cool, I can speak some English. You know, it's not.
Then just tell them, look, step one, stop fucking singing. Because we all know that's how they sound. Like, oh, what just happened? That's how they all talk like that. They all talk like a gnome in a child's cartoon show or something.
No, it's the chef. It's the chef from fucking what is it? The
Sesame Street. Yeah,
Sesame Street.
Or Muppets or whatever. One of the two, right?
Yeah. No, that is it. Bork, bork, bork. Dude, but so I mean, I'm curious. What's your take on that situation? Would you have rather have had it because. This is a bigger topic that I was talking about in the past, i.e. how do we handle cheating? And this could very well be another way, another way to try and address that. But I am open to the idea of, okay, you guys want to be sports? Well, then we're going to be sports. No commentary in the arena. Just, if you're a fan, just enjoy the fucking game. Make some noise, do some chants, sing, do whatever you want, but like no commentary in the arena. Like, why not just nip it in the bud completely?
I'm at this
and
point, like, last
commentary
year.
Goes into the stream. If you want, tune into the stream or have a radio or something, but then...
That's my point, dude. They've already nailed this years ago. What I don't get is, as soon as crowds started cheating, here's the key thing. As soon as casters talking into mics became a problem, to me, the obvious solution was... Everyone in the arena, you don't get there's no speaker blasting the commentators. Everyone has a little headset they put in because the player doesn't have the headset, does he? So you get rid of that problem immediately. To me, that seems like a slam dunk. And then also tie it into this option. What if it's something like you're in France and half the people want it in French? Well, we've got a solution, haven't we? Change to channel two. There you go. You've got it in French now. To me, that's just an obvious slam dunk move, right?
You would think, but like, again,
and by the way, if you ever host an event in the future in like China or something, you're gonna have to do this anyway. By the way, they're not gonna be speaking English, and most of the fans there. So, if you ever host it in certain countries, you're gonna have to do this approach.
Should have, what, you know, how many foreigners are going to be allowed into China to attend the event?
Fuck all at this point, yeah.
But that would be, I mean, you know, that would be the thing, right? Obviously, this is there are technical solutions to this. That's a question. Yeah. You know, it's like, how are you, you know, are you going to be able to pay for however many headsets you're going to need for the people who want?
In fact, I'll tell you, there's an example, Sam, like in esports where this was routinely done, which is if you ever went to visit Monte Cristo in Korea and he was doing like League of Legends or Tears of the Start, or what would happen is if you went to the event, obviously it's in Korea, so they speak Korean, you don't get Monty doesn't come on the speakers, he's on the sidecast. What they would do is if they saw you're a foreigner, either for a fee or sometimes they just give you it for free, they would just give you a little headset. And when you put it in, because you're a foreigner, you get Monty and Dora, and then you don't get like Caster Dong John or whatever his name was, like you get that. So it's already being done, actually. Like the model's there, you just have to scale it up for the major. You just have to have thousands of the headsets and not make them interrupt the frequency or whatever the fuck, wouldn't you?
It would solve the whole issue of that whole issue of commentary, and the commentary would get better. Like, that's the thing. I mean, again, discussion of how important commentary is in the grand scheme of things.
So, man, this is something similar. If anyone's never been to one of those events, it's actually not very, it's not that easy to hear what the commentator is saying when you're in the crowd.
Exactly.
Like, you just hear like a booming voice that you do really, like, oh, blah, blah. But like the joke is, you can actually get a way better quality if you could just hear him in your ears, like the stream at home.
Mm-hmm. Especially, dude, remember Globe in Stockholm? It's an echo chamber. Like, the whole thing is just an echo chamber. It was impossible noise in there. It was like headache.
That's the only time ever me and Semler willingly entered an echo chamber, despite what you might read online. There you go. You're blocking and all that, innit? Yeah, blocking.
Dude, come on. But what was it?
About the sound coming
through. Yeah, the sound. It would solve all the problems if you just did that. But okay, fine, fair enough. They're going to cuck the French to please the international fans. There you go. I mean, at least.
And the worst thing about that news, Semler, is the jokes just write themselves. So the joke is, obviously, the French initially were like, we're going to stand our ground, French only. Then they were like, you know what? Maybe we just give up on this one. You didn't even hold out until the major. What was December? The fucking main O-line.
So how did they get flanked to this time?
Exactly. There you go.
Dude, there it is. I mean, you can't really miss a chance, dude. I fully approve of this. Rag on the French all you want. It's always full.
And also, I will just say, if you are French, understand this is like when everyone riles up Brazilians because they get annoyed by them. The actual joke, like France surrenders, isn't even a good joke, by the way. It's only funny because of the response it gets, which is it does mad trigger French people going, no, we're not. Because if you don't know, by the way, historically, it's not even accurate. France is actually one of the best countries of all time at wars. Spoiler, I'm English. I know that. They fucking kicked out. If you don't know, France just took over England at one point in time. That happened. It's like this, and they had probably the maddest angle ever. People in the Anglosphere don't know anything about Semler. Because one thing I've learned through esports is how different history is in all the different countries in the world. Like, you know, I tell the story that, like, in the UK, for example, you don't get a single thing about the Revolutionary War because to us it's irrelevant. It was like such a speck in history. Everything's about like the British Empire, World War II, the Victorians, and Henry VIII. Well, if you ever go and if you don't know this, like, I knew nothing about French history except for when they interacted with England, right? So I didn't even know how insanely huge that empire was. And that essentially they still have some elements of it to this day. Like, that story's so undertold, is mad, isn't it? People don't even know all the insane shit France was doing, man.
Because the whole narrative has pushed towards France are a bunch of cowards, which is just completely false. Even in the mythical context of World War II, they fought tooth and nail. They just got fucked.
Yes.
They just got fucked. They had no way around it. So it's just totally.
Do you want to know the maddest aspect, though? I might be off on this, so I'll accept. Okay. If someone tells me I'm wrong, I'm wrong. It's fine. I even think off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure I looked this up years ago. If I'm right, this is a banger point as well. You know, the entire symbol that everyone uses to mock the French is the white flag. They ran up the white flag. Do you know the actual story for that is even more mental? Because I think the story for that, Semler, was something like it was actually England fighting against France. And because England wanted to surrender, they ran up this French flag. flag, which was like a flag of a certain area of France at the time. So the joke is, it was the English that did that. I think it was the English that did it in this part. Like, it wasn't even the French that did the white flag. That was a way to symbol you were surrendering to them or something mad. You know what I'm on about? I think that's right, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I think if I'm not mistaken, it's the Bourbon flag that was white. So
it was definitely some powerful like French dynasty or something. Yeah, exactly. According to this, it was the Ancien regime or whatever the fuck that is, but yeah, whatever.
It's so hard to find
in the 17th century, apparently.
But there was the flag of the monarchy during the time of the revolution, during that whole period of time, and it was the Bourbon flag, I'm pretty sure, and it was white.
So the actual genesis of that meme is actually like inverted at this point.
Everything has to be inverted now, you know. Everything has to be inverted. That whole history is absolutely wild. And then, of course, you know, just forget about Napoleon. I mean, he just, you know, completely dominated the European landmass for decades, you know, just total.
As an aside, I actually do expect that this Paris major will be a really good crowd atmosphere compared to the one that was in Brazil. Because one, we've already had the event in Antwerp, and spoiler, don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Belgium's basically like a version of France, if you don't know, like.
It's just a made-up country.
It is. So already that had a pretty banging crowd, if you remember. Like I always said back then, one of the reasons, I can dislike elements of the crowd, but like the idea, for example, that all those ultras that aren't even in the playoffs of the major still came to the matches for the major and did organized chants, that is incredible. That's like football, mate. That's actually very impressive. The Brazilians only did it for a bazillion teams. They didn't give a fuck about anyone else. So I actually get the vibe, mixed with the fact that like a number of years ago, there's been a couple of like big League of Legends tournaments, like MSI in 2019 was in Europe, Worlds was in Europe in like season 5 or whatever, 2015. I'll tell you, they've all had mega crowd atmosphere. So I actually think this will have a really good crowd too. I think that aspect will be very good, in my opinion.
It ties into another point that I wanted to talk about, in that there's rumors that or at least people are asking whether or not Blast are going to open up the previous stages of the major the same way that Rio was, right?
Yes.
But I mean, the obvious joke there is that this isn't Brazil, and this isn't
it costs too much, right? Yeah.
And also, yeah, the cost is huge. But even the idea that French teams are going to make it that far, I don't even think the French teams, like at least the Brazilian teams, have stood a chance of making it at least to the first stage of the major, right? Like I don't even think that the current French teams are even good enough to make it that far. So why would you? The whole point of opening up those things was to show the Brazilian teams to the Brazilian fans before the Brazilian teams got knocked out. If there's no French teams to even show to the French fans before the French teams gets knocked out, why are you gonna spend?
I know
the money
what you mean, but here's the problem. Events? That's because to you, like me, accurately to you, Vitality isn't a French team. It's a team that has some French players in it. Yeah. Because they have Zewu and they have two French players, in my opinion, they will just get all the French crowd. Vitality will just have so many fans at this event, mate. So many.
For sure.
So if Vitality doesn't make playoffs, you are probably fucked the whole event. No pressure anything, Apex. So you are getting, if you don't make the playoffs, you're getting fired. I'm just telling you right now.
Okay, well, I'm actually kind of curious about this. Well, hold on. Like Sponge did actually he had a good tweet the other day where he kind of put it out, like the French teams that are actually out there right now: Heat, Falcons, Gen 1, which is Sixers team, LDLC, which is Aminek's team, and then TBA, which is Shock Smith's, Cursey, Natu, and Deos, which was just announced last night. That Shocks, you know, that's what they're putting together.
So you mean what the French scene has done, Semler, is they've managed to take a load of talent that could maybe make two good teams and make like five tier 4 teams. Why have they done that? Why don't you make like one really good team? What the fuck? Like, this is depressing when the project is titled as, oh, that one's Aminek's project. Dude, Aminek's supposed to be the worst player on whatever team we're making here. Like, if that's his project and he's the name, my God, like, what are you talking about? And of course, then the Sixers team. In my brain, the first thing I still think is, he's not still playing CSGO. But, bro, you weren't even that good. You never made it past 1.6.
Dude, they're still going. They're still going. It's amazing. Although, this is actually the kind of project that I do want to see Shox involved with, right? Because, okay, like, if he can't get into a Tier 1 team, why fuck around with some international roster? build up the French scene. This is like the French scene should be one of the most dominant scenes, and it was. It put out dominant talent for years, and the drop off happened just like with Sweden, where you created that vacuum where there was no way for new talent to get in and to actually get the experience necessary to form tier three, tier two, and then tier one teams. And so at some point you're going to have to do it, unless you do, CS is just going to die in France. So maybe Shoxi, you know, getting into an org like this, making his own org, and then setting it up so that, you know, perhaps that is going to be the future, right? He's going to be involved now in the revitalization of the CSGO scene in France, and then going forward have an org of his own to build on. I mean, like, this is a project that I'm actually kind of interested in for Shoxi's sake. I mean, Smiths is also involved with it, and Smiths has said straight up he's the first to step out. You know, he wants to be on a staff role on this, but he's playing right now, but he wants to be a staff role. So as soon as somebody comes along to replace him, he's out. It's not even like some kind of idea of like him hanging around. So what did you, was there any like French team that you were thinking like, okay, they have a chance to make it to the first round or?
Not really. Like, the sad thing about those, like, put it this way, I actually think the one I have the most hope for is the roster with Kenny S and NBK, etc. Because, like, I just think those pieces can actually be good enough at their roles. Like, NBK can be a really good fucking, like, role player. He's done it the last few years. Kenny S, I think it's inevitable eventually Kenny S just gets into a run of form, ways into the game again, and he gets good. Like, look, I won't be a peon, but I've already seen some of the stream clips. His actual skill level's still there. He's unbelievably good.
Wild.
It's just whether he's going to get back into the like professional grind of you do it every match and you do it in tactical settings, etc. But his skills are still there, mate. Like, that has not dropped off at all.
It's still so nuts. You're right. Like, I saw that when you linked in your Discord the other day. It's just,
it's mega, isn't it? People don't know, Kenny S is one of the only players to this day who does like the actual simple things, like just routinely in games. Like, I see, if basically every time Kenny S streams, he produces like a highlight, which is like an AWP ace where he does like simple shit where like three of them are just no scopes that you wouldn't even attempt if you're a normal human. Like, Kenny S does the ones that Simple does where you like do the no scope, you just know it's gonna land somehow, and you're like, what? And they just get like the like absolute bullshit kills. Like, he still seems OP skill wise, mate. He still seems mad OP.
Oh, dude, it's so sick. It's so sick.
And that's a player, by the way, that as long as they have any of their like original qualities, as long as they're not whack anymore, I'll watch someone like that till the end of time. They've just got my ticket till the end of time, basically.
Well, I mean, I don't think that Blast are going to do it. I think they're just paying lip service to the fans saying like, oh, yeah, totally, we're considering opening it up. I think that they're fully 100% focused on the arena portion of this. They're going to just do everything they can to get everything to run as smoothly as possible, because they don't have a team like ESL does, you know, where just a lot of bodies to throw at a problem to solve it. You know, it's like,
I'll give you a reason why it's a bad idea as well, in my opinion, to just open it up like that until it's a proven concept. Because here's the difference. Say I bought tickets somewhere, like you say, before the event, say I'm a Vitality fan, I'm just hoping they make the major final. So I bought tickets for every day of the playoffs, right? Now imagine, instead, I'm telling my dad, no, we can buy it for the whole major. So we buy like Challenger stage, Legend stage. Like, guess what? If Vitality goes out in Challenger stage, we're probably not going on the final, are we? Like, we're just going to, that ticket, that's going to be an empty seat, even if we bought it. Also, similarly, let's say in this scenario, we're Vitality fans, but there is no Challenger and Legend stage to go to, and Vitality doesn't make it, we probably still go for the playoffs. We've got the tickets. Like, we want to see the matches. Like, in a fucked up way, for how the events work now, where realistically, it's actually all about how good it looks on the playoffs, you're probably better just ensuring the playoffs has the banger crowd and is sold out and no, you know what I mean? Like, I see why they would hint at that because of the Rio one. But like we said before, there's very cynical reasons why I think they could do it in Rio, but you can't in bigger countries. Like, they're just the costs alone. Like, I'll bet the costs were ridiculous compared to like the joke would be, there's no way you'd do that in an event in like Copenhagen or Sweden, mate. The costs would be out of the arse, wouldn't they? Wouldn't be worth it. Wouldn't be worth it at all.
Oh, no, not a chance.
Because if you're a fan, you have to remember what's bizarre about this is they're not going to make actual profit by putting more tickets on sale. They're just sort of like letting you, the fan, have benefit. Like, that's why it's a weird angle. It's not really even a business move, is it? Like, if this was going to make money, you'd do it tomorrow to make more money. You'd make three times more cash, wouldn't you?
And it was also almost from ESL's perspective, right? It was almost like a guarantee that they would fill those. At the rate that things sold out, you know. So for them, they knew that they were going to fill those seats. They knew it was
going to be something that was worthwhile. Because remember, Semler, at the beginning, when all the drama was actually, it wasn't even about like having for the challenge. Remember, it was initially just, we've got to have a bigger stadium for fucking the finals or whatever. There's a reason they didn't capitulate on that one, because I think what they did is exactly what we saw here. They saw the ticket sales and they're like, we're never going to fill this giant stadium. Are you out of your mind? Just don't say anything. Because the problem with TOs, if you haven't noticed, is none of them are really transparent. They're not actually going to tell you their reasoning. They're just going to figure out, like, they're going to reverse engineer the reason for why they're doing what they're doing now, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's go ahead and let's start talking some of these roster changes then, because I mean,
let's do the shocks one first, because there's too much comedy packed into that one. We've got
We can go. I was going to try and hold out a little bit and talk about Nip first or something like that.
Because here's the problem, man. I care too much about this. Literally, okay. This is not an exaggeration. Literally, yesterday we were doing an episode of the Four Horsemen that'll be coming out soon. It's about the state of like the financial and business side of esports, and we had Tommy, aka Lurpus, as the guest, right? And so on this episode, at the end, we did the viewer questions, right? And there's one of the viewer questions. Someone said, like, you know, what would make your day or something. So my joke at the time, because this is before the news had been announced, it was announced right at the time I was answering this question. My joke was, I'd only heard Shox is making a project, so I said, it's obvious, isn't it? Apex gets cut from Vitality, so that means Shox is now free to make a team that is Shox, Kenny S, NBK, Apex, and who do you know is coming back? Existence. And we're only doing the lineup Thorin always thought should have existed, but never did, and we're just doing that, and it's a real last dance, right? Except we never played together, you know. But like, and the problem is, as I said that, someone pointed out, nah, you've got to look, it's just been announced. And they said, you can go watch this response when the VOD comes out. They're like, he's playing with Smiths again. And at first I think they're trolling me, because it's like, surely not. Like, no, are you fucking with me? It's like, because that's the problem. It's like, bro, at this point in time, someone just needs to make a French remake where he's like, Edward, I cannot quit you, bro. Even though I am French and you are French, it's the one thing I'll never quit is you, Edward. Like, give me a fucking break. Give me a break. Because here's what I don't get. Mate, we all criticized him in 2016 when Smiths was back. Then in 2018, when he came back as like a support. That's actually an area, by the way, where people were very critical of me. Because I famously said, like, why are you all bagging on Smiths? And people did that thing similar, where they ignore what you're actually saying and just make up what you said to be mad at it.
Sure,
so what my point I was making was, if Smiths comes back to be like the bitch support player, he could probably do that role. If people don't know, he was one of the great support players in early CSGO. My problem was when he was being the primary AWPer. That's a very different role.
Yes, that's
so I didn't have a problem with the comeback in 2018, but it didn't work out. It was shit. He was actually very bad. The idea you run it back in 2023, like, come on, bro. Like, I know he shocks his best mate, but why does he have to be a player? You know, why can't he just be in the org and be the coach or some garbage like that? Like, if he's a player, the problem is this guy's... In the past, when we used to get mad at Smiths playing with Shox, it's because Shox was at least amazing, right? So at least that evened out. Shox isn't even that good anymore. How's he going to play with Smith? The problem is, when I just see those two names alone, Shax and Smith, it's like, right, next. Like, I'm like, what about that Kenny S and NBK project? Like, there's nothing here. This is garbage. Like, basically, unless some of these players I don't know are just like the next sick Zewu type player, does this team have any hope? Isn't it just nothing? Just the Shax and Smith's love affair reunited again.
Someone make a series.
You know that series that Richard Linklater made where it was like, you know, like Midnight in Paris, like whatever, like it was like, there's that series where it was all about those Ethan Hawke and that fucking Julianne French actress meeting up. They meet up like 3 or 4 times and it's like a love. They should just do one of those about Smiths and Shox just cannot be separated. They're just drawn back together throughout time. Like, this is mental, mate. This is too much. This is a vanity project gone too far. Too far. Although I will say, actually, I won't say it. There you go. I won't say it. There you go. What do you think about this move, Sam? What do you think about this project? Because I agree. Look, if you make it the abstract, like the concept Shox decides to make his own branded org, that's a great idea. You should have done that years ago. The joke is, after he got kicked out of Vitality, you probably should have done this move already. You'd be like a year ahead of the game. You could have gotten different, better players that we don't know. I actually think the concept's good. I just think the players they picked are a bit whack.
Okay. Yeah, no, this is perfect, because I want to get your reaction on this, because I was just like, okay, so who are these three new players that are going to be playing alongside, you know, these veterans, Smiths and Shoxi? Because I'm like, okay, fine, fair enough. You know, it's cool that Shoxi's getting together, and it's like I said before, you know, it's like Shoxi could put himself in a position to really try and just bring up the next generation of French talent, right?
Well, this helps. Or I can tell this.
I'd rather him be doing that than doing an international roster or whatever. Build up the French roster. Let's go. Right? Okay. But then somebody mentioned in my chat, like, oh, but don't you know who Deos is? Paul Deos Neal, one of the guys who he's playing with? And I'm like, no, never heard of him. So this is a quote from him. I was banned on ESEA. I was unbanned only 2 to 3 weeks ago. I don't cheat now. I will join the team very soon, but I can't say anything about it yet.
So some Kaylee shit. Why, though? Just why? That's what I'd have to say.
So they're bringing on a guy, apparently, according to him, I think he's I tried to look this up if he was still Faceit banned or not, but apparently he's unbanned on ESEA. Faceit streamer and player who got 6500 ELO, so I mean, you know, fucking A, said that he was unbanned on ESEA 2 to 3 weeks ago and he's about to join the professional team. He talks about it on his stream. So they're bringing on a cheater. or a guy who has a history of cheating, at least. You know, maybe he's not cheating now, but he's apparently got a history of it. So it's just like, what the? There was nobody else. There's nobody else to bring on. What is going on here?
Worst part about that is, dude, this, when I actually, that's the other thing. If these were all like, oh, it's okay, Thorin, don't worry. Like, you don't watch Tier 3, but this is basically like the Monacy, Ziwu, and Wonderful of like French CS, and so they're going to be really talented. As you're saying, they're just guys like no one ever heard of. It reminds me of that scene. If anyone's seen the classic movie with the brilliant cast, Glengarry Glen Ross, where Al Pacino at the end goes absolutely mad on Kevin Spacey. He has some line where he just goes like, he says something like, I don't know whose nephew you are. Because you know, in like nepotistic organizations, you just give like your sister's kid some job or something. That's what this fucking team looks like. Like, did Shox just owe this guy money or something? Why is he playing in a team with him? And also, here, by the way, a really bad sign is, if people don't know, I saw there was the news recently. It's implied by, wasn't it, the Heat players? It implied they haven't got, like, one of them's owed 100K worth of salary from last year's, and it was never paid.
Oh, that was, yeah. And then the Heat, right? This is all where we're just like, nothing's been corroborated yet. I'm waiting for a journalist like Richard or somebody to write this up. Somebody who will do the due diligence.
It was alleged then. Okay, right.
Apparently, like, then the owner of the team came out and, like, did this long explanatory post where he was like, listen, they're getting their salaries, but there was, like, something in the contract that they haven't been paid up at, and that's a, then there's, like, a bank issue or whatever, like, basically just explaining the whole situation. But again, it's like, it's a screenshot of a Discord message, and you don't know if it's him or not. You don't, like, there's no actual proof of anything.
Fair enough.
I'm waiting for a journalist to actually talk about that story. Somebody like, something
really
like
disturbing implication, though, yeah.
But I mean, yeah, no, it is. But dude, I mean, again, it's just, you know, that meme where the guy's got the noose around his neck, you know, he's like, first time, you know, or it's just like, well, welcome to esports, you know, where you're just going to get burned. There's just going to be guys who are, you know, there's going to be teams who don't pay. There's going to be TOs that don't pay. There's going to be all sorts of fucking weird shit that's going on because.
Well, the other meme would be, it's the meme where you're all like tied up handcuffs being shot one by one by the communists. And then it's just one guy in heat, so pick a random player, just turn it, we can make it like Jax or something, turn it into like Joko, just going, you know, this is totally illegal what they do. Because that meme as well. That's another one of our favorite memes, except, you know, in the memes, you know, this is totally unconstitutional. It's like, who gives a shit? They're killing us, you moron.
Exactly.
Like, it's over in it. It's over for us, you fool.
Well, there you go. That's the Shoxi situation. There is a paragraph at the end of this article, actually, that I just found.
Do you know what's sad? I will say this, though, just to be on brand and keeping it with the narratives of By the Numbers over the years. Don't worry. As bad as Shox is for never being able to quit Smiths, I'm as bad for Shox. Because do you know what? I still hold a 10% chance in my heart that Shox can get really good again. I know he probably can't. Like, I'm saying 90% is not going to happen, but there's a 10%. I'll never give up that 10%. That 10%.
Listen, there's still, I mean, the thing is, I mean, it really does make you wonder, but I mean, he couldn't play with NBK. I think there must be too much baggage between
the two. There probably is. I think those two, it's not even, I think, that they like hate each other. I think they're just like, it's a bit like me and Carmack, if that's a good analogy, because you know him, mate.
Water and oil.
We just fundamentally cannot get along. Like, if we just had a conversation, we would just argue about, like, you know, what the fucking weather was. Like, we're just, they're like that as people. They're just naturally, they're chalk and cheese, yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame because that would have been an interesting sort of scenario.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Shox joins Falcons, and then you've got Kenny and BK.
I mean, you take my joke and make it a real life. Like, obviously, Existence isn't coming back, and Apex isn't getting. But if you took my actual premise, it's actually not a bad one. Imagine Kenny has Shox and MBK plus two. That's a pretty interesting mix, right?
Yeah, just bring back Existence. Let's go. Let's go all the way.
Put Amanek in there. You can make a pretty decent five. It's not even bad. But
you got Mistura in there too.
Here's what pisses me off, Semler. That people do make garbage Last Dance projects like Imperial, but this is the Last Dance I want to see. The other one as well, by the way, I actually am going to make a video on this. Like, Last Dance is that you would want to watch. Like, I'll give you an example of Last Dance I would watch. Do a real Fnatic Last Dance with, like, JW and Olaf Meister and Floyd. Who wouldn't watch that? That's cool. Doesn't mean they'll be good. Do a French Last Dance. Do MBK. Why can't we have, like, lineups that are actually, like, intriguing premises, you know? The other Last Dance was, like, not everyone knew that was never going to be good. It was nothing to watch, was there?
We're going into this phase now where it feels like a lot of teams are going to be in this kind of weird holding pattern, right? There's no, like, clear top dog. There's even rumors going around that Rain is going to be taking an extended break. I mean, towards the middle of last
year. I mean, he just had a kid, didn't he?
Well, exactly. So it's like he may very well be taking an extended break now where he's going to spend time with family and have like a parental leave or something along those lines, which, you know, fucking hey, good on him. I mean, he's been going nonstop for years and years. So it's like no problem there if he wants to. But then that also means, okay, so what are FaZe going to do? It's not like they can reach out to JKS. He's on G2. So who are you going to bring in? Config. is still out there. Like, that's the one thing where it's like, Config is still out there. He's not got a contract.
What was said as well, this is a consistent point. You can go back years. I have always said, literally, Carrigan's the IGL I always wanted Config to have. Because, I mean, I think unironically, if Config played for Carrigan, he'd be a top 10 player in the world. I'm telling you right now. Like, he would just make the game so comfy, he'd dominate.
Think about it from FaZe's perspective as well. They don't spend money on buyouts, and they don't want to. They want to do things in a reasonable way. They're probably concerned with paying the salaries, which are going to be competitive. But past that, that's it. Like, they're not going to spend a dime more than necessary. So if Config's out there without a contract, you could bring him in for like a 6-month contract to play with FaZe while Rain is on hiatus, and then there you go. But again, it's not the.
And it's a great culture fit. Here's why, Semler. Because actually, the owners of FaZe will go, wait a minute, Config. We've looked into your background. You're like a bit of a fuckboy who can't really talk well and who gets too sort of caught up in illicit substances and could potentially either kick someone else's head in or got his own head justifiably smashed in. Welcome to FaZe Clan. Like, they'd just be fucking, they'd relate instantly. Like, whoa, he's me. He me. It'd be like that meme. Like, he me for real. Like... the joke is they think he's
in the meeting and it's the Spider-Mans in a circle all pointing at one another.
Yeah, so then they're like, look, so we've seen you've had all these problems, so you're in, and now we've got one thing we want to ask of you. Ugh, no social media, I'll bet. No, you've got to do this entire line before the end of the contract. So, come on, I'm racing you. Come on! Oh, you put methadone in mine again. I wasn't in Na'Vi. I wanted fucking pure shit. This, oh, fucking, you're like that guy in Malta. Yeah, whatever, you get the joke. If you don't know the reference there, I made Boomich catch a stray on that joke. If you don't get it, but whatever. If you know the reference, if you know, you know. If you don't, you know.
Speaking of fucking Na'Vi, dude, they've even gone this route as well. They brought in this guy NPL, who to replace SDY, and you're like, okay, well, SDY, I don't know what's the dynamic in Na'Vi anyway. So it's like. It's just this weird, I'm in this weird spot right now where it's just, I don't really have a team that I'm super excited to see play, apart from maybe G2, because G2, it's like, if you ever had a time G2, it's now. But, you know, like everybody else, all the top dogs, they've got a new player on. You know, like Nip have made their roster move. They brought in Hedtrick. You know, Na'Vi, they've got their fifth. Astralis have got this guy Buzz. So I'm not even super stoked to see Device play. It's just like, okay, it's going to be Device and Blame F. And then they're going to have to, you know, integrate this guy who has no experience whatsoever. So if anything, it's kind of even, I guess, because you're going to have four experienced players on all these teams and one new guy. And so if anyway, in any sense, it's like they almost had a gentleman's agreement where they're like, okay, we're all going to fuck ourselves up for a bit of time. Beginning into 2023. Okay, good. Shake. Yes. Okay. We're all going to make roster changes then. And it's just going to be chaos because that's what it feels like right now with all these roster moves, man. It just feels like you're going to have this weird ramp up period where either, like you pointed out at the beginning of the show, right? Either this gamble works wonderfully and you got a guy like Hedtrick who takes off, or it is just that it's a gamble. You put it all on black and it came up red and you're fucked and you're locked in, or you got to find some way to find somebody to make these changes, but there's nobody out there with experience that you can afford to get. It's like the CS scene is in like a really weird place right now in terms of like the elite teams. Not really sure what to make of any of this, right? If Electronic is the IGL, does Na'Vi now regret not having Monacy? I don't know, Strobe. That's a good question, actually. No, I don't think so, because they've still got Simple, so you're not bringing Monacy.
I'm never going to regret that. The problem fans have is this, is fans just think like, but we could have both. It's like, you can't really, like, one would just not have the AWP every round. Exactly. So just, unfortunately, it just wouldn't make as much sense. Like, here's the difference as well, and this is the most unfair thing people are doing with that. If you go back, I was quite critical of G2 getting Monacy in the sense that, like, I don't think it was ever a guaranteed slam dunk that you could know this guy would be the best. People are going to go, no, but he was like, a bit like Zebu. Those are the greatest outliers in history, for fuck's sake. Like, normal players, it's hit and miss whether they make it, especially in the first year. So actually, here's the difference as well. Na'Vi didn't sell this Monacy at the end of 2022 and go, we'd rather not work, both work. They sold a guy that was, like you're saying, was going to be a replacement for Simple and was way worse than Simple at the time. The difference is, now if you know how good Monacy is, maybe you would go, well, maybe I could be like the one person in history to make like a true god-tier dual op. Yeah, now you'd gamble, but you couldn't know back then. Like, the actual deal Na'Vi made, 600k for a guy who's never played tier one lands, I would do that deal tomorrow, even knowing what Monacy was like. Like, it's just too good a deal. Like, the gamble for Na'Vi is amazing there. The upside's incredible. Even if he ends up being good, it's probably a fair deal. And at the time, you thought maybe you were even ripping him off, you know?
And there was a distinct chance of that as well, because the whole Na'Vi Academy team was built around supporting Monacy to make him look as good as possible. And so that's not saying that Monacy isn't incredibly skilled and all of that, but it's kind of like a Kenny on Titan kind of situation where it's like the whole team is geared towards getting you that op and supporting you. You get every grenade, right? Like, that's how Monacy got it on Na'Vi as well. So there is a gamble element to that where it's like, okay, now you're going to put him onto a team where he doesn't have as many resources that are completely geared towards supporting him. You know, how well is he going to do? And well, it turns out, obviously, that, you know, given the last year's performance, it turned out pretty well. Good on him. But there was always that element of risk, and there's still that element of risk with all of these these fifth men that these teams are picking up in the shape of like Hedtrick for Nip. And Buzz for Astralis. Like, Buzz, there's no history on this guy. Like, hardly anything at all. So you're just like, okay, you couldn't have got anybody else in the Danish scene to play a fifth for Astralis?
That's what worries me about moves like that, Semler, is like you're saying, what should happen logically, if that's actually like a good, like a shrewd move, is when the Reddit post is like, Astralis to sign Buzz, all the top comments should be like, yeah, I've actually seen him in like tier 2. He's actually a legit player. Like, he's up and coming. Like, he is the guy. You never see that ever for player. That's how you know those ones are just plucked out of nowhere completely, you know?
Yeah. No, without a doubt. Without a doubt. No, it really does throw you for a loop. And I guess from Astralis's point of view, you know, maybe they just they put all their money into getting Device back and paying Hunden's salary. And so they just didn't have any money left. There's no money left.
The old pantomime joke would be that, like, when they were in their big industrialist meeting where they have all the evil scum fucks who run Denmark and politics, but they don't know anything about esports except Astralis. They're just like, okay, Nicholas. Tell us the plan for next year. And he's like, well, the big problem for us, you know, we had all these issues. And they're like, we need to get our Buzz back like we used to have, you know, when we were the best. And someone's just written down in a note to the meeting, like, get Buzz. And then they've just gone, right, got him, got Buzz. They're like, you fucking idiots. Easy mistake to make.
Oh,
what was it? Pantomime joke. Don't worry about it. It's not good.
It's great. It actually works.
It worked out in the end. It's all good.
All right, but I did set up the Hunden joke so we could talk a little bit about this. I guess it was common knowledge. Obviously, the writing was on the wall when there was that whole thing of like, oh no, he's just creating content with the team. he doesn't have
mad props to Richard Lewis for the millionth time. He wasn't just guessing and he actually nailed what was going to happen. And if you go, but technically, Thorin, he joined as an analyst, not a coach. One, what's the qualitative difference in the actual game? Remember, we're at a point now at LANs and majors where you can't even fucking signal your own players. Like, analyst, as long as he's in the call, is the same as a coach. And then B, the most genius move that I saw someone on some other show point out was that this is actually even how people, terminology-wise, got around the original coaching bans. They just moved, like, Twist is now the analyst events. So the joke is we've all culturally accepted that, like, actually, analyst's not that big a deal. So I think secretly he just is the coach, mate. They've just backdoored it. The Castle guy's the assistant and Hunden's the coach. It just seems obvious to me. It's just that this is a better political way to introduce him into the team. Because here's all you do now, Semler. Say he comes into the lineup and you have a couple of good results. In 6 months, you just say you promote him to head coach, and then you've greased the path, haven't you? No one will complain then. You have the results.
Yeah. No, I think you're bang on the money. It's just a title at the end of the day. You know, it's just like, you know, like,
exactly.
It doesn't make sense to have it any other way on Astralis, and they've just found the most palatable way to put it forward. Now that the cat's out of the bag. You know, there was even that rumor going around about like Copenhagen Wolves or something, you know, coming back into the mix, and like Hunden would be there or whatever. It's just like, nah, this was it. Hunden is back on Astralis. He is going to be calling it. And I mean, if you know, it's the thing is that in the context of bringing Buzz on board, well, I mean, Hunden is one of the very best at finding talent and making talent work.
True. Yep.
So maybe we do need to kind of look and see, like wait and see, take it with a grain of salt that Buzz has brought in with zero experience. Because maybe this is, you know, one of those things that Hunden does where he's just been paying close attention to the Danish up and comers. And he's like, yeah, this Buzz guy doesn't have any experience, but he looks good. You know, the eye test, you know, he looks good. And if it's Hunden saying it, you're probably like, okay, well, you know, it's not going to cost much. You don't have a buyout. You could probably pay him minimum wage. He's going to be fine. You know, if you win some prize money, there you go. A little bit of extra change to throw his way. Costs, overhead is going to be super, super low for Astralis. So in that context,
it's a joke, Semler. It's largely going to be based around how I phrased this. So listen, just take a seat. This is going to be a masterclass, right? Yeah, I agree, Semler, because the thing with Hunden is we know from his career history and resume that he's really good at figuring out how to set up a player, whether that be in the server, getting them to where he wants them to be, boosting them up, or whether that's mentally getting them on the same page as him, that they agree with what his vision of what they're trying to do together is. But enough about when he fucked over Tessess and Nico. Ba-dum-tsh. There you go. Well done. Well done, wasn't it?
Boosting. That was a good one. I like that. That was good. There you go. That was solid.
And also, and ironically, he is actually really good at those things for real. Like, he does seem like he's the best talent scout. And actually, I think the most underrated part isn't just the scouting. In my opinion, it's not just that he gets good players. It's that he does actually for real have a good sense of like what sort of player you should become. If people don't know, I think that's, by the way, that's the reason why, if we take the drama out of it, I agree with Astralis. This is the number one person I would sign, because Astralis at this phase of their careers aren't just signing the absolute best Danish player. They're trying to go between and have a couple of stars and a couple of cheaper people and make it work a la NIP, funnily enough. So in my opinion, if you look at Hundon, the actual skill Hundon seems to have is sort of like figuring out this is who you should become as a player. Because think about who his proteges are. If people don't know, he was the one who brought into our consciousness Shush, Acor. These are the fucking the shit now. These are the players we're all watching win the events. And like, well, I know Acor did, but like relevant players. Like he helped shape these guys from like there's a reason they were nobody before Hundon, because they hadn't had this process. So, unironically, I also think if you can get past the bad PR, and if one org can, it's Astralis. I think it's also a really good signing. Like, it actually is a good way to maybe have a chance to get back up.
Yeah, and again, it comes back to him being an analyst instead of a coach, so you don't even need to parade him around. He can be the coach. Doesn't have to. He can literally.
Well, here's another good thing. If he's an analyst, technically, he doesn't have to do any interviews, because at this point in time, if there's one thing I'm saying, if I'm Astralis, is he will not be doing interviews under, like, he's fucking shit him. He said all the wrong things on everything. On social media, he's fucked him a million times.
Just leave it be. Let the other guy do the talking, and you just coach the team. You just focus on your job, coach the team, get it done, get Buzz into a good spot, get that team into a good spot, and let's see Device and Blame F, you know, take over the world, essentially, at this point, because it's going to be on their shoulders.
Oh, are you kidding me? So, you know what Hundon's first name is, of course? Nikolai. So even his name has a lie hidden in it. Fuck it. It's just perfect branding, isn't it?
I totally forgot about that. Holy shit.
Yeah, the three liars. You've got Nikolai Device, said he was leaving Astralis near 5 steps ahead. You've got Nikolai Nyholm, the ultimate liar, the prince of lies, the devil. No, he's not bad. I'm making that sound cool. I know, I'm making him sound way cooler. I'm making him sound like he's like that bad guy in like Legend. You know, where like Tim Curry's character is like that giant, like Doom-style demon. I was like, I am Nyholm. He's not even that. He's just like some shit side. He's just some grimmer worm tongue cunt, isn't he? So there's that one. And then there's then Hundon, the third liar. The three liars. There you go.
I can't believe that this is how it's actually come together. It's like in the CIS region where everybody's a different variation of Daniel, which is, you know, if you invert that, it's a Linad or whatever, right? So there you go. You always get that in that CIS region. They're all got the same name.
They all got the same fucking name. I know.
Such a trip. Looking into, I was curious about we had a bit of that going on, like the roster changes and all that, which is good and all. I mean, I guess we could talk briefly. Have you taken a look at any of these HLTV picks? Have you been keeping track of like
the top 20? HLTV, yeah, I've had a look. Yeah,
like the award show that's coming up right now. That's going to be happening this weekend.
I do have a take on that if you want. Because here's the thing: normally when we do these top 20 lists, I will say, in my opinion, every top 20 since the online era is by definition scoffed, because it's stuff like there's less events, there's not the same amount, blah, blah, blah. There aren't as many consistent top teams. So I will say, in past years, like if we were going like 2018, I would instantly have like 3 or 4. I'd be like, this is outrageous. What the fuck are they doing? I think actually it's way harder to do these lists now. And I think if this year, particularly summer 2022, I actually think is the hardest ever, because it starts with Simple. So Simple's obviously the player of the year, but even he had sort of a down year. And that's why when you get to names, so today is the day, if people don't know at the time of recording, that number 5 Nico came out and number 6 was Brokey. Right? Off the top of your head, I'm sure a lot of you had the same response I did. When you saw number 6 Brokey, you were like, what? Wait a minute. Number 6? Like, dude, was he really the 6th best player the whole year? Like, he wasn't some superstar. But then when you look into it, it's like, no, this is why, to do a list, to actually be fair, if you're going to criticize someone else's list, you need to make your own. And here's why. Because here's what I would tell you. Well, who else is going to be number 6? Because when you actually go and look at the list, at what people did and how they played over the whole year, it's just a bit of a scuffed year, guys. It wasn't a year where, like, the top dogs were so blatantly, like, dominant. Like I say, people like Simple and Z, we even had months where, or tournaments where they were just all right. It felt like it was a bit more of a scuffed year. So I think, actually, this is the year where I have the least, like, dispute with their list. Like, I would have different placings for certain players, but I think in general, like all things with HLTV, actually, it's not that I've changed. HLTV's just changed over the years, and they've just actually, I think, leveled up their techniques and processes. Like, I'll give you a random piece of information now, Semler. You remember the old HLTV top 20s, the ones I hated. So a classic example is in 2016. You remember when Nico was going mad on Mouse Sports? But because Mouse Sports was mega shit, they weren't relevant at majors, they were never making the playoffs. Yeah. They very rarely even made deep playoff runs in any tournaments. And so even though this guy was like a young rookie speaking a second language, working with like shit, weird, like German, Dutch, terrible team. And he was IGLing HLTV, including a guy who is from like the same region as Nico. The game will restart in 1 second. They had Nico number 11 player for 2016. Here's what's different. Nico in 2022 is number 5. He didn't make a single major playoffs and didn't win MVP at a single LAN. That means actually HLTV's come round to my way of thinking, which is what they've done is they've just looked with their eyes at the body of work Nico did, and they're like, look, it is his fault that like G2 didn't know that. They had the problems with IGLs. And he was mega though. Like, he was still really good. So I actually, that's why if you don't notice, it's not that I've softened. I actually think HLTV's just done a better job the last few years in all regards. The world ranking's better. These end of year rankings are better. I think the methodology is better. Even the news posts to some degree are better. Like, they don't do that dodgy shit where they didn't link someone else's report or they pretend they scooped DK because they had like 80% of the same story and he brought out a they've actually become a pretty legit website in general. They're actually just leveled up. So I actually thought this one was pretty good. I thought it was one of the better lists they've done.
Yeah.
Did you have any that stood out to you?
No, I'm happy to hear that because I'm kind of in the same boat where it's just this whole year feels like a bit of a blur. And then it is that, you know, it's like, who else would you have in, because you're not going to have anybody from FaZe in like the top three, top four. They're all going to be around in like the top 10 to 15, which is kind of how it played out.
I think it's about right. Broky, if people don't know, the trio of FaZe that we always talk about, Broky is 6, Rops is 8, and Twist is 11. That sounds pretty reasonable. That's one of the reasons that people don't know why we're all bigging up Carrigan. He didn't have a top 5 player. He just had like a bunch. The joke is he really did almost like money baller. He got like 3 players that can let together become simple or something, you know. It's like you actually did do that sort of.
No, that's the wild. That was always the wild quality of Carrigan in terms of his IGL. But no, like I feel like they did a good job with it all. It's just now going to come down to like the wire in terms of who is actually going to be taking that top spot. Simple seems to be ahead of it, but then how does it break down after that? Because you're gonna
number
have, like,
two one's the most interesting
Shiro.
One, probably. Yeah.
Who else are you gonna have? You're gonna have Zaiwu and Shiro and probably Axile, I guess, that are gonna be.
It's assumed those are the top 4. Yes.
Yeah.
Because if people don't know, just the raw stats on both Shiro and Axile are nuts. Like this year, they had. It's why actually Cloud9 was such a difficult team to talk about. Those two players, when they're on their game, are top 5 players in the world. Their problem is when they're not, they can just go really far down, you know, or just become okay.
Yeah, so they have, let's see, I was looking through this. Now, the reason why...
If I had to guess, I'll give you my prediction now, Semler. Number 4 will be Axile, number 3 will be Shiro, number 2 will be Zero, number 1 will be Simple. I think that's the order they will do it in. Just from looking at how they did it on the other ones and thinking how their minds... I think that will be the order they will be in. That's my prediction.
Interesting. So you wouldn't have Axile above Shiro. It's just going to be 3
off
the top.
That's the thing. I might, personally, if it was me doing it, but I think how they do it, I think, like, if you don't know, because they are on some level going off stats similar, being a star AWPer will always be more OP stats-wise than a rifler, because think about it, right? You shoot the guy and he's dead or he's not. With a rifle, if I do 89 damage to you, that's almost a kill, but it isn't a kill. So the problem is, like, riflers are always going to have a harder time hitting the same stats metrics, so I think just naturally Zero will always be above Axel, and that with 3 AWPers at the top of the list, which seems apt for how the game's judged stats wise, right?
Yeah. No, it feels like that makes sense. That makes sense.
Like, I don't hate if people want Axel there. I agree the rifle's harder. To some degree, he's more the X factor. I think Shiro's more like, to me, Shiro's the meat and potatoes of Gambit / Cloud9, and Axel's like the X factor that wins you the game, if you know what I mean.
Oh. I mean, it's looking like there's going to be quite the guest list and everything too. So this is actually, like, looking through the guest list, it's actually pretty cool. Because like Henry G is going to be there, Natu is going to be there, Vendetta is going to be there. A bunch of guys from like the older crew are actually.
You get your invitation to get lost in the mail. What's going on?
Yeah, no invitation.
Oh, weird how that works, isn't it?
But I don't want to read too much into it, obviously. And it's their event, so if they want to invite me, they invite me. If they don't, they don't. But I did take a gander because they do have the women's section, and I was.
Oh, by the way, I'll just throw this out there because people who are By the Numbers fans will appreciate this. This is actual pure fucking cringe. Let me just get you guys a quick tweet that I wanted to show you. So as people might know, because everyone is, like you're saying, revealing, like Carrigan's going to the HLTV, wow, Simple's going, you know, they're revealing all these, Shiro's going, they're revealing all these names. Well, one name I saw that is going, that you might be puzzled by, is the manager of OG, Vladislava's going, right? Whoever, everyone knows, like it's a great scene person if you don't know, right? Man alive. I'll have to find where this comment is. I'm just checking for it now because it's so fucking bad. Let me see. Let me just see where it is. I just have to find. Basically, she said, someone on Twitter said something about her, like, attending the event. I'll have to find this exact quote because it's so bad. I'll have to find it. Wait there a sec. Wait there a second. Let me just find it.
It's so bad.
Oh, here we go. I found it, right? So what happens is, this is only 22 hours ago. Vladislava on Twitter did a tweet where she sort of said the next event she's going to. She was like, you know, we have a boot camp in Denmark. Then we have the Blast Premier Swing Groups. Then we have IM Katowice. Then we have ESL Pro League. And then we have Blast EU RMR. And then some guy who works for Vitality just replies like, add in a bit of blue with the Blast TV major. And she goes, working on it. So then Professor from HLTV, classic cringe lord, jumps in. Not even a conversation to do with him, and goes, and the award show, because she just said she's going to work on going to the major. So he's going like, and the award show, like telling her sort of come to the major, the award show for HLTV. Are you ready for the cringe? Some random fan goes, do we have any award for Vladislava this year? Oh, wait a second. Actually, that guy works for Relog Media, so I guess he's not a nobody. He goes, do we have any award for Vladislava? This is Professor's actual reply in 2023 on the internet. He goes,
I don't know if I can do this.
Her presence is an award for everyone that will be there. Let me doff my hat, milady.
Milady.
Fucking hell, homie. You're simping that hard? I know you got Simple going to the event, but fucking hell. I think you're the biggest simp in the room. What the fuck's that shit? What is that? Your, my lady, your presence alone is an award for all of please, please. That's, I feel like I'm being waterboarded when I read that, guys. I can't handle it. But I tap out. I don't know
Dude, I can't handle it, dude. I can't listen to that shit. Dude, you just reading that alone.
And
was...
here's the other thing, guys. Go and look up all those classic pictures of Professor where he's dressing like he's like Patrick Bateman. It's like, mate, add that. Imagine that guy saying that like... Well, of course, your presence would be a gift to all that. Get me out. Oh. I'd say, I want to just, it's like that team, you know, the one everyone links that gift from Team America World Police where he's being sick. Like, that's how I feel. It's just spewing all that chill.
Oh, man, alive, dude. That's so good.
Fucking hell.
I can't believe you caught that.
What's he, a professor in PhD in simping? This guy's ridiculous. This guy's ridiculous.
Shit, there was one.
I had to get it out there. I had to put it on the record. That's all, guys. I had to get it on the record.
Oh, no. Fuck. Nah, damn. Now you've just reminded me. I'm going to have to go back and find something, too. I got to go find one. Like, there was some fucking epic burn. Nah, fuck it. I'll have to go back and find it. There's too much shit. Fuck. No. Okay. Yeah, right. No, I don't know. I don't see that Olga's going to be attending. But top women's player of the year, top three, Anna, Olga, and Vilga. So the Brazilian player who...
you know what's sad about that? I know so little about women's Counter-Strike at this point in time. I actually thought that was just the name and the alias of the player. Like, it was Anna, Olga, Vilga. Like, oh, is she the best player? She said, like, no, those are three different people. Like, oh, my bad. My bad. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, that player is up for it. So it does really... I mean, I don't know.
Who was actually the best? Do you know all those? Who was the best? Is it Vilga?
No, I think statistically, that's the problem. I think statistically, like if you go off of the HLTV rating or something, I think it would be Olga. But they're probably not going to go that far. They're probably going to give it to Anna or something like that.
Oh, the Brazilian girl is the one you're talking about, right? I think actually I've heard of her. Fair enough. Never watched a game, of course. Don't worry about that.
No. But yeah, that is probably, it's probably, I don't even know how to read that whole situation anymore, right? If it's like... It may very well be that at this point it's like, okay, I've said my piece, whatever, you know, you guys, it's like, it's on the women now to do their thing. If they want to make a deal out of it, they don't. And if they don't, well then, you know, it took barely a year for there to be, for it to be one out of three. So, you know, we'll see how long it takes, you know, to get to three out of three, but that's probably very likely in the future. So,
by the way, as an aside, one thing I will say, if you look at the HLTV top 20, that I immediately think to myself is mate. Even though I did always say I thought the lineup slightly underpowered, the actual results at the end of 2022 for Heroic are very impressive, to have one player on the whole top 20 and he's only at 10th in Stown. They don't have big names, guys. Like, that's actually, remember at the first major, they only lost to Na'Vi. They were going to win that game and probably go to semis, if not final. They would play at Ents. The other major, they were like in the mix again. They were in the final. Then they won a black. Like, that's actually, for the talent they have, they overperformed, if anything. That's pretty legit. Not even Cadian's on the list, understandably.
No, I mean, that, and again, you have to reemphasize just how essential Hunden was to getting that squad together and getting that performance role.
Oh, back in the day, yeah.
You know, that's sure. The thing. So it's just like Hunden is an eye for talent. He can get more out of people than you would think, and he's instrumental.
You know something fucked up, Semler? Even though people are going to think I'm joking, I actually do for real think that's part of why he seems to have like attempted to sabotage Heroic so hard on the way out the door. I get the sense for real his whole vibe was sort of like, I made this fucking team and you're now going to kick me out. Fuck you. Then I'm going to destroy. It's like, I brought you in the world. I'll take you out of here. By the way, if people don't know, I think that's why Nicola Nihon wanted to destroy Heroic using Hunden, because Nicola Nihon made Heroic, if people don't know. A lot of people don't know that to this day. They do if they're fans of this show, so I won't belabor it. But essentially, the whole point of Heroic was to one day be like a fucking like feeder team to Astralis. Slash, they were going to make Blast.
It was the original Academy.
And they were also going to try, if you remember, because they had Godsent as well, they were going to make like a Blast exclusive league or something at one point. That was like another idea that Richard did not. About when Nihon was trying to own like every aspect of esports, just like the S4 guy did, to be fair. And obviously that didn't happen. But if you were Nihon, I've always said on this show, the fact that years later we did bring back Academy squads and you can sort of own two, that does feel fucked up. Because if you're Nihon, you're like, I would have Heroic and Astralis right now. What the fuck? What the hell?
Yeah. And it's all arbitrary as well, depending on which region it is and, you know, how it all goes down. It's not like a conflict of interest isn't still very much a thing in the scene. Depending on where you look. So yeah, no, it is one of those things where it's just like, are we actually saying that that Nihon, you know, might have been hard done by? Wow, yes we are. All right, do you want to get some questions in?
Yes,
do we move on to the questions? All right, we got a few of them, and guys, we're still taking questions for the show. So for next week, if you're a supporter, you can get in there and
say this one thing, because this is what we've been saying on the other shows that aren't like the CSGO ones. The problem is, the reason we're not promoting GrogCoin, telling you to buy it right now, is because at the moment we're in like a transition phase where we're probably going to move to something else. But here's the key thing to say. Don't worry, we will take care of everyone who is a GrogCoin holder and you won't lose out in any way from this deal. So at the moment we're still figuring out exactly how we do it. But for now we'll take the questions, but we're just not going to promote that aspect. So we're transitioning from that. So don't worry, there'll be news coming on that. News coming.
Precisely. Oh, at least, I don't know. This, I'm getting the news too. So there you go, guys. Let's see. Let's get into the questions. Masu Kitan, what manual labor job would be most appealing for you to do? Manual.
Ooh, here's the problem. I don't actually know what the answer is because I haven't done many manual labor jobs in my life. But I would just say, from knowing men, like I grew up in a poor area where everyone did a manual labor job, including most of my relatives. So what I will say is, from my experience as an outsider looking in, the best seem to be the ones where you're a type of craftsman. You're not just like laying bricks, like some really boring rope mill. It's like you're doing something hard, like you're a plumber, joiner, carpenter, you call it in other countries, electrician. Because the reason why that could be cool is you're not only helping people, so you get to directly, tangibly see, like, wow, this family will have heat over the winter now I have fixed their boiler. These people have a working electric. You don't only get that satisfaction, but you also get the satisfaction of like problem solving. It's like a satisfying creative endeavor. I know it doesn't seem like it to people, but those jobs, like, remember when you go to someone's house, there isn't really a manual, like you just put the thing there. It's like every house is different. So you're like, right, I've got to do the electricity this way. Like, it's way more creative than people think. So I think for me, the way my mind works, even if I'm doing physical labor, which will exhaust me, I would want my mind to be active as well. So I feel like that would, something like electrician, I think would get into my vibe. I will say it wouldn't be electrician because I'm probably too scared to electrocute myself, but something like that is the point.
Dude, no joke. Those guys, you know, it's like, I was thinking about it. I was like, man, those guys, like, you guys just got to deal with that at all. You have to just be extremely good at your like processes, I guess, to make sure that you are.
It's like CS, you got to have protocols. You got to do everything. Exactly. Yes, exactly.
You know?
No, for real. Yeah.
You get three times before you're touching that wire.
Dude, but if you ever see those guys working like a plumber, if you ever walk in and try and flick a switch, they'll go mental, mate. Because as you say, they've got the whole system set up. Like, that is off. This is off. This is safe. Yeah, oh, there's a whole system. Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you pick? Do you have something in mind you pick?
I would try to go for. Because it's either carpentry or just a general handyman. Like, I knew a guy out in the south who was just a general handyman, which meant that he had like basic you know, like just basic stuff on everything. So like jack of all trades in a sense, which
because meant that's what men used to just be like 40
exactly.
Years
ago. That's yeah. That is precisely it. And like
standing dad, basically.
And, you know, yes. You're trying to fix shit and all that. You're like, man, I really wish that I had some basic understanding of how like fucking plumbing works, so that maybe I can fix it myself. And this guy, he's just one of those like Uber guys where you're just like, holy shit, you're like, you can just do everything. And it seemed like the perfect job because it's just like, yeah, I'm really feeling carpentry right now. Just does a bunch of carpentry, you know, like, oh, now it's like, you know, like you don't necessarily need to be pigeonholed into one trade where you're always going to do that trade. I mean, of course you can, there's value to that. Don't get me wrong. Like master craftsmen or whatever, who are like completely zeroed in on one thing, but like just the ability to be able to just be good at doing most things around a house, like fixing a house from top to bottom. That seems pretty freaking cool to me. So like, you know, being able to set up a business doing that, that would have been pretty slick. Especially considering you could do that, like he just did that out in the farmlands. So then you could be out in nature all the time, you know, working on farms and stuff. Fuck yeah, that sounds awesome. All the guy did was just fix shit and then hunt all day. I was like, what the fuck, dude? You guys live in the dream. So yeah, that would probably,
also, by
probably
the way,
be on that point.
The one thing I will say is sad though is I as a young person, I'm like everyone. I was just brainwashed by the same bullshit media to think you've got to have your own life and pick a totally different career that no one's ever done before, because that would be your own expression of your character. What I realize now is, like, one thing I actually do miss is the other thing that's awesome about those crafts is the era where it's a tradition and you do pass it from father to son. Because if you do that, an area, this is one of the reasons, by the way, why I think actually like the standard of general competency in all these fields has dropped off a cliff. Because even those guys go and learn in a shitty classroom from some guy who's half qualified and wasn't good at his job anyway. If you learn it from your dad, and his whole life was doing that job, and he learned it from his dad, who learned it from, then here's why it's next level. It's like an analogy. I was once talking on my side channel to Robin Black, who's an MMA analyst guy, sort of like the Yanko of MMA.
Basically. I listened to the first one. Yeah.
And what he talked about was, he made this point that like the reason why someone like Habib was so amazing in MMA is because he's not only following the philosophy of his father, but because he is genetically related to his, that's like your dad going, I learned all this with this equipment. You've got the same equipment. Let me just give you the fucking secret. Yeah. How to use this in an OP fashion. That's OP. You can see why in history, when those lines existed, craftsmanship was at the absolute peak of civilization.
That is one of those things. It's like you get the same vibe from farms. And when you talk to, you get that vibe from farmers who are just like, yeah, my family moved here like six generations ago. I'm the sixth generation of farmers on this land. It's like, dude, you're going to have a connection to that land that's unrivaled, completely unrivaled. It's not like, oh, I moved into this apartment that's only existed for 40 years or whatever. It's like, dude knows that his great-great-great-great-grandfather, you know, was tilling the soil that he's now so tilling.
And it's going to give you more of a respect for the job, isn't it? Exactly what you're saying. Course, like, put it this way, you're not going to be the guy, Semler, if your grandfather literally like was working as some dirt poor farmer to give you the soil. You're not then, when you get a successful farm, going to go, right, just putting all like the fertilizers that destroy all the land and like fuck it all in one. You're not going to do that, are you? The guy who's doing that just for money is going to do that. You're not. You're going to care about it. Basically, by the way, to spin it back to the beginning, that's why I think it's some sort of craftsman, because you're not yourself going to think, I'm just a wage slave, waste of money. You're going to think, actually, I'm doing something special. I'm trying to be good. I'm trying to be excellent at something, do something meaningful. It's honest work as well. You're not
it's honest work. Off. You know, it's like you're not out there grafting or, you know, you're not out there trying to hoodwink people or anything like that. I mean, obviously you're going to run into tradesmen who aren't honest in some sense, you know, that we've all had that experience, but like, you know what I mean? The general gist is, it's honest labor. All right. BZ, whose CS career, if presented to a layman, would be the most unlucky case? Would it be Guardian? Well, okay.
His career presented to a layman.
The most unlucky case?
Unlucky.
Unlucky, the most unlucky.
It wouldn't be Guardian. Guardian had a fabulous career in CSGO.
If anything Guardian, I would say
he's lucky, mate. He comes from fucking Slovakia, and he was like in one of the best teams ever, and was in major finals. He's had a very lucky career. I'm trying to think who would be really unlucky.
Existence for me, Cali.
Existence is definitely up there because essentially, like, he did zig when he should have zagged a lot. And if people don't know, brother, all he needed was one of those majors to just be good, and it would have broken that whole like curse, because that became like one of those mind phantoms. Yes, exactly, where like precisely. Initially he didn't believe it, and then his teammates didn't believe it, but over time they all started to believe it, and then in the end even he believed it. And I even remember telling him, like, dude, it's over when you believe it. Like, we're supposed to be battling this shit. So Existence is definitely one way. Put it this way, he could have had a way greater CSGO career than he did. He could have done everything. He could have won majors, had eras, all that shit. So he's a good one. I'm trying to think of someone else who's a good one. So if we're going for really unlucky, read the question again. Let me see what the phrasing was.
whose CS career, if presented to a layman, would be the most unlucky case?
I mean, this might sound harsh, but the most logical one, 6 from Mouse Sports in 1.6, he died. If people don't know, the story was his team was like 3rd or 4th best team in the world. They were going to an event in China, IEM Shanghai. I'm going to guess it was like August or July of, I think it was July something of 2011. And when they were going to the event, no, it was 2010, sorry. And when they were going to the event, he missed his initial flight, went back home, took a different flight a few hours later. And as he was driving, or his girlfriend, one of the two, was driving, they just died in a car accident. So that's going to be top of the list if we're going by the literal sense. This guy was like right smack bang in the prime of his career, and his team was very good. And he would have been, and by the way, he was from Germany. He could have been like a mainstay for years. But even from his age, he even would have played the first few years of CSGO. That's a very unlucky one because it's a very rare example of where someone tragically just died out of nowhere. Yeah, do you have like a different one you want to do? Anything CS, actually, is the one from the career you think was unlucky? Who do you think was mega unlucky in CSGO?
Oh, no, for me, it's got to be Existence, because for the very reason that you just pointed out there as well, the whole mental path where it's like, if he could have just had that one little bit of intangible luck that could have gotten him a big win.
Yes.
You know, like DreamHack winner 2013, getting nip in the semifinals instead of the finals. I mean, like, there's just all, like, there's just so much where it's just like, it could have gone a totally different direction for him. It just never got. And then, of course, when everything, it really looked like it was lining up, like he had the perfect, you know, 1-2 combination punch in Kenny and Callie, and it's like they look like they were ready to take over the world, and then Callie's a fucking hacking piece of shit. And not only that, it cost them their team. They fucking lost massive sponsors because of it. The whole fucking team goes down. You're just like, what even is this? So, yeah, no, I'd have to, like, if I were to explain it to somebody, I'd just be like, yeah, it'd probably be Existence if I was thinking about it.
By the way, as an aside, just for comedic purposes, I won't say who it's with, but I have an interview with a French player coming up soon. Don't get your pants in a twist. It's not as epic as you think. I'm purposely not saying the name because it's not a big deal. And also, you don't pay for my Patreon. Fuck you. But the other thing is, because I do reveal who the upcoming guests are, I've got an interview coming, right? And in that, he does tell part of the story of when Kaylee got VAC banned in Titan, right? And here's the point he made that I'd never thought of before, but it is insane when you think of this. Probably the worst part about Kaylee getting VAC banned, because I've heard the story from everyone in the house now, is essentially, as far as I know, he got VAC banned, and then he just sort of told people, like, oh, I didn't even do it, I just installed them. And then he was like, anyway, I'm off now, and just like packed his bags and left. And the point that actually he was implying that I only thought about when he made this interview is that is actually the worst part. Because if you, Semler, were someone who never cheated, you'd been a pro player, you'd been in LANs and majors, you'd been in semis of major, you've done all these things, and you did get VAC banned either just from installing cheats to yesterday or wrongly, what you would do is this. You'd be tearing the house up. You'd be screaming, I'm innocent. We've got to contact Val tomorrow. Guys, I didn't. You wouldn't go like, I didn't really do it. Anyway, I'll snip off, shall I? I've got to get, the last bus home. That just makes it look like that's so conspicuous, mate. Like, what? So I just throw that in there like that. Because I agree. That was actually the major, by the way. Because if you know the history, like DreamHack went in 2013, you're just lucky with the bracket on that one. Partly because you lost that BO1 to nothing in fucking Swag when they did the switcheroo on the Inferno bomb site on the end of the game, if you remember that one. That was like a BO1 that changed it all.
They couldn't even get a new roster either, if you remember correctly, right?
Like, they weren't even allowed to play. And this is the maddest deal. That tournament was the one where the reason I think that would have broken the streak is because that was the only one where they weren't the favorites. That was one where they were coming in as a dark horse, but as you say, we're like a pretty powerful lineup. So if anything, the pressure there was just make top 8 and you could have even done more. And then as you say, it wasn't just that Kaylee got banned. This is why I had that massive fight with Valve, as you remember. They wouldn't even let Titan like take Scream or some other player re-qualify online. They were like, because essentially, and people don't get this to this day, Valve didn't blame Kaylee. They blamed the whole Titan org. They actually told me to my face that the other players must have known he was cheating. Yes, they told me that to my face. So I agree that was right in the middle, if people don't know, of all these major failures. If you got that sort of, if that took the monkey off your back, then okay, after that, who knows what happens, right?
You know, completely different scenario. It could have been a completely different scenario.
Even look at Carrigan's career. People said this guy was a chalk for all these years, but this year, last year, came fucking good, didn't it? All looked awesome at that point.
Mm-hmm. All right,
I agree. That's a good shout. That's a good one.
Divorce lives in Lucky's shadow. Oh, divorce.
Lives in Lucky's shadow.
Divorce lives in Lucky's shadow. All right, Semler and Thorin. I am currently... Sorry, I skipped one. Divorce lives. Who is your favorite character from the Lord of the Rings trilogy, movies or books, and why?
Ooh.
The thing is that I've actually been toying with the idea of rereading the whole thing now, because I haven't read it since I was like, I don't know, 20, 18, 19, 20, somewhere around there. So given all of my life experiences from then till now, I think I would, it would just be a completely different experience to read this book now. So it's actually on my short list right now of books that I want to just, I want to sit down and just have the Lord of the Rings and reread the Lord of the Rings, because it's been long enough where I'll have forgotten a lot of the details in the books. And I'll probably have a completely different take on this entire trilogy now than I did then.
I'll say this, right? One of my main problems with this question is, I will admit, even though I do like Tolkien, spoiler, my name is fucking Thorin, right? One of my biggest problems with both The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings is I actually think the hobbits are the worst characters in the fucking books. Like, first of all, some of them are just shitty, like, little Mary Sues that just get through every possible scenario for no reason, just because they're good guys or some bullshit, like, power of friendship level. And so already, most of those characters off the table. I find most of them quite annoying. So for me, it's actually, the shortlist is pretty short. The obvious answer is probably Aragorn. He's just a mega fucking, like, main male character, isn't he? Like, he does the hero's journey arc amazingly, like, he's broken, but then he sort of, like, connects to his heritage and comes through the Crucible and the Dark Knight. He just fulfills a lot of the checkbox. But if it wasn't him, the other obvious two with the brothers, Boromir and Faramir, are pretty fucking banging characters in different ways, but they're both bangers. I think they're both great characters. I think in general, by the way, those three characters are the best reason to get young men to watch or read those books. Like, those characters will speak to you, I think.
Yeah, I really, that's what I'm looking forward to the most, is just those three, actually, and paying close attention to those three in particular. But Boromir and Faramir, like, the whole arc of Boromir now, I'm really interested.
Oh, he's a badass character, isn't he? Yeah.
With a fresh set of eyes. So yeah, no, I tell you what, I'm going to read that book, and then I'm going to read them, and then I'll come back and answer you again.
Obviously, by the way, the troll answer, if you just want to pretend to be all, like, fucking effete and, like, above all the plebs, you go, my favorite would probably be, like, Tom Bombadil, but you guys probably don't know anything about that, so, you know, only for the OGs, so.
Yeah, the OG who just skipped in, sang a bit, then fucked off again, never to be seen again. Yeah. And also, it's the part where he pops the ring on and off, and then, like, the ring has no effect on him. You're just like, wait, what?
Because he's just been chilling. Oh, it's... Exactly, he's just been chilling. Don't worry about it. Because if people don't know, the implication with that character is potentially that was Tolkien's self-insert, and he was just showing that, like, that's him as the character in his world. That's, like, the implication.
Yeah, he's above it all. Love it. It's going to happen. It's going to happen this year. I'm going to reread it, and then we'll go, we'll have a conversation about it for sure. All right.
Why did that never become, like, a fucking piece of, like, fucking slang? Like, that pussy was the Bombadil. That would be the shit. That sounds amazing. I think we should bring that in. We should start doing that.
All right. Bring it all back. Bombadil. All right. Next question. It's Young Badger. Semler and Thorin, I am currently 7 years through the 8-year process of qualifying as a chartered accountant and considering moving from the Southern Hemisphere to Western Europe, most likely England or the Netherlands, to work after qualifying. I have a European passport, so visas won't
be... Wait a minute, Semler, pause 1 second. I just want to put a pin in it. It sounds like he's one of those nutters on Reddit who think we're just like the caricature of right-wing people who just hate all immigrants. But he's trying to build up the backstory so he would check every box we would have. Like I'm a high-skilled character. I did go to university. I have no criminal record. I have a wife. Like, I have, you know, and I'm very much interested in integrating into your culture and learning your tradition. You know, it already sounds so suspicious. So come on, hit me with the rest of the question.
I know. What advice, if any, could you give to someone considering such a move? That's the question.
I think he means in the sense of, like, I assume he means how he would manage it. Like, what would he do when he gets here and stuff? So essentially, he said he's moving from the global south. Was that what he said?
From Southern Hemisphere to Western Europe, most likely England or the Netherlands.
I have got a piece of advice then, because I haven't moved continents like that, but I moved to Korea or whatever. All I would say is a rule I actually do hold 100% in my own personal life when I've lived in other countries. So the most famous examples are South Korea and Seoul and in Netherlands and Amsterdam, etc. One thing I always say is always behave as though you are a guest in someone's house. I don't care that they give you legal papers or they say you're a citizen now, or they go, oh, if you have a child, they're as British as anyone. Like, first of all, that's a ridiculous premise. But more importantly, you moved there. You chose, I want to be that place. So what that means is somebody in that country did some things right, and there's some things that were attractive to you. So how dare you, if you then move there, then be like, well, first of all, scrap all your shit. I want to bring all my shit from my country. No, no, homie, you stay there if you want to do that. If I go to your country, by the way, I've lived this. I I might complain on a podcast somewhere about Dutch people. I'll never complain to a Dutch person in real life. Like, when they have their customs and their traditions and their own weird social things, I view it as I'm, like, staying at someone's house. Like, I'm not going to be like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, that's just obnoxious. I would just say as a general rule, because it'll ingratiate you with so many people. Not only, like, embrace their culture, but understand, essentially, by moving there, you are agreeing to become part of it. You aren't moving there to go, this is your bigot, get rid of it all. Like, then don't come, mate. Don't come. I became Kamala at the end of that one. Do not come. Do not come.
The thing is, though, is that to anybody who would buy into those stereotypes, you just sound like the total, you know, the total nut job, right?
You know,
like,
the sad
completely
thing.
Completely unreasonable.
If you go back in time.
All cultures are equal, God, Duncan. Don't
if
you know,
had just given that advice to A, Device, and B, Boomich, they could have changed their whole careers. Do not come. Do not come. But they had to come, and it changed everything.
Exactly. They had to, and it fucked everything up. There you go.
What do you think, though? Do you have any actual real advice? I'll just give, like, abstract advice there, obviously.
No, yeah, no. I invest in a good – if you're going to, England or the Netherlands, I think you can get some pretty good knife vests, you know.
Okay, there you go.
Online. So you may want to look into that. What else have we got that could be useful for you?
Ironically, if you've got an accent or anything, just go for real. And in fact, this will tie into something I was talking about earlier. Go on for real, get elocution lessons. Because here's the thing. I used to think, Semler, are they like a ripoff? Do they really work? Dude, Vladislava herself is the fucking best example I've ever seen. She went from having a perma hard stock broken English, like Rusky type accent, to having like, actually like, because the secret with her is she also learned like to speak a bit slower, like pronounce it. So, dude, her voice sounds really legit when she speaks in English now. It's leveled up a lot. And I know she took a bunch of those lessons for like a few years. So I would just say invest in that. It'll help with your job, with people understanding it. It'll help with everything.
Yeah, loads of practice. I mean, loads of practice as well. And she's just, she's really nailed it. What advice, if any, could you give to someone considering such a move? That is precisely it. Integrate, and do the best you can at it and make an effort to. And really, I mean, if you're planning on staying long term, it really is a question of just you are that, man, fuck off, dude. You usually get you, it's like we're on the same wavelength. So you give a lot of the same advice where I'm just sitting here thinking like, yeah, you're a guest and you're, it's like, you're a guest here. You're entitled to fuck all nothing. The people should be entitled to chuck you out if they don't want you around, because it's just like, it's their country. So if you operate under those assumptions, then I think you're going to go a long way and you're going to make a lot of friends, and it's all going to be groovy.
If you want like an actual real world practical piece of advice that I know from the esports history, here's an obvious one, right? In your case, you're coming from the Southern Hemisphere, so it's probably not a problem. But if you were, for example, like a middle-class American that was moving to some like European country, like maybe you're moving to Paris, here's one like very practical piece of advice, Semler. Don't walk around in Paris with your iPhone out going like, hey, yeah, where was that like restaurant? Like, I've only got like 4,000 francs if I put like... I'm such a boomer, I actually said francs, but whatever. Pretend that's still the currency of France, guys. Right?
You are
going to get robbed within like 30 seconds and get your ass handed to you. I'm telling you right now, don't do it. Be way more discreet, put out with some practical advice.
Hold on, as a chartered accountant, what even is a chartered accountant? Like, I mean, accountant means that... be familiar.
No, as far as I know, chartered means like, it's like their equivalent of passing the bar for a lawyer. It just means that you have like the official, like the charter in England means from like the crown or whatever to do, in this case, accountancy. So
sure.
I know what you mean.
That qualification passes from
I don't
area
know if
to area.
It, as far as I know, in theory, there'll be some crossover. It's like a global economy. In
I mean,
it,
it's
so
8 years as well. That's talk a long about time. Brain drain. I'm just sitting here thinking like, dude, you've invested 7 years out of 8 years. It's an 8-year process of qualifying for it. And you're going to fuck off out of your country? Like, Stay in your
yeah,
country.
But the joke is that's probably why he did that. That's his escape plan, isn't it? Like, this is his prison break.
I mean, brain drain is a real thing. Fucking A, man. It's like, if you're smart enough to make that happen, it's like, dude, your country probably needs you. Like, I don't think England needs you, man. You should probably be trying to do something for your country. Also, I mean, this is the other thing that people don't really... I mean, I know that we're so atomized now, and I obviously have no idea what your family situation is like, but that is one thing where it's just like, you know, when you move and you pick up and you move and you're going somewhere else, it's like you are essentially saying, you know, to your friends and family, like, I'm only ever going to see you just like a few times for the rest of our lives, because I'm, you know, it's not like I'm going to live around the corner. Yes. So you need to be okay with that as well, because that's it's a big thing to it may not be apparent immediately, but it can definitely become a thing down the line when it's like you don't have that support structure right around you. You know, it's like you better build one fast wherever you're going because you're going to need it, right? Because it's a totally different thing.
Well, I know what you mean. Put it this way. I think a lot of people do get caught in that position where they almost view it like they're taking like a sabbatical and just doing like a year in another country. But if you actually look at what they did, like you're saying, if you actually kit and caboodle moved there, you essentially are committed to like my family and from me onwards just lives in this country from now on. Like this isn't, I'm not fucking around for a year. Like this is my life. Like I'm building a new life somewhere else. So I'm uprooting like that. I do think people underestimate how big a deal that is. Cause I've heard exactly what you're talking about, especially from the esports industry. It's people who took a gig like an American in Europe working for like LEC. What happens is for a year or two, yeah, you can do it cause it's fun and novel. But eventually you realize like every time it's Christmas, unless I go back to the US, I'm just here on my own with a cat in an apartment or something while everyone else has their families. That part will suck, unfortunately, you know.
That is definitely, yeah, that is definitely one of the things. Also, when you want to start a family of your own, if that's in the cards for you, it's like, you know, not having your parents around or, you know, your significant other's parents around or whatever, right? Like whatever your situation is, it's just like, dude, there's a reason why. It's like having parents around and all of that is a big help when you're trying to start a family. So I mean, it's like, it's just stuff like that. I don't know, practical stuff, but you know, not to get too deep on it. It's just, I think we gave some good advice. All right, Architect of Korean Esports Base Joe, what's up, dude? Favorite hotels.
You know what's sad? That's actually the area where we have fucked ourselves in our careers, if you think about it. Because if people don't know, I'll tell you another reason why not only do your favorite talent and influencers not speak out against Saudi Arabia, they go out of their way to say how brilliant it is. Because here's the one thing that they do at those events, guys. You will be in the most God-tier five-star hotel ever when you go to one of those events. I've had it happen when I went to China a few times. I've been to, like, there's one in, like, Shanghai called, like, I don't know, like, fucking Golden Pearl or something. I can't remember what the fucking name is, unfortunately. There was one in Shanghai, like, unironically, something, it was actually, I couldn't even believe it was real. Like, it was the one where when you would go for, like, your meal in the restaurant of, like, hotel, they would have a buffet, and it was so huge, the buffet, that it, like, it lined an entire ballroom, and it had, like, all world cuisine. So you could go to one thing for, like, noodles, one thing a guy will cook you, like, an omelette, one thing over here, they got, like, steak and fries, and that. And like, this is just a fucking hotel meal, like, mate, it was unreal. Like, it was one of those ones where you could almost just stay only in the hotel and get all the food, like spa. Like, I've been in some that were fucking insane, mate. I'd have to look up what that one was called, but it was mega. It was unreal. Have you ever really had any like that you've been to?
I mean, dude, when we went to Taipei for that IEM qualifier, that's actually something that I remember. The breakfast was amazing, but it was a small hotel. It wasn't like some fancy thing or anything like that. But for it being just like a small business kind of hotel, the spread and the breakfast was terrific. Dumplings, fried rice, all sorts of shit like that. And then you had your, like you say, some omelet and stuff like that as well. So it's like you could have whatever you wanted. It was awesome. So that's one of those like off the top of my head. And then
you know what's wild, Semler? That's actually the esports equivalent. I figured out for you. Here's a little gift for you. You know Matt Walsh doing the "What is a woman" became the line where if you can't go over a certain size, you know where someone stands.
When I thought we were zagging,
Don't say anything, but the esports equivalent of the Matt Walsh "what is a woman" question to a politician would be ask a public figure. I talked about an event in Shanghai. Semler talked about an event in Taipei. Just ask them which countries do those cities reside in. Because all I'm saying is, much like the question, it'll be very telling when you find out who can't answer that. Spoiler, most people in esports can't answer that question. So we'll leave it there. Leave it there. Because we want to be on Twitch next week. So we'll leave it there. And that's just the question.
I know, dude. I'm on my best behavior.
Go on then. What's the next question? Go on.
All right. Cheesecake enthusiast. Who wrecked themselves harder, Config's tweet about Heroic or Nyholm's tweet about Hunden?
Here's the problem. It surely has to be Config. Because here's the problem. Config is still being judged as an individual. Whereas even though Nyholm's an individual, people just know, like, he's just a guy who runs an orcs. No one really holds him accountable. Like, let's be real. Who did meme on? There was only me did it. Like, a lot of people memed on Config, dude. This is one thing I find real. You know what? I'll say it right now. I find this really whack about esports. I think straight up, here's why Config gets all the shit and Nyholm doesn't. Because if Config says it, right, first of all, his stock's at the bottom now, and he's not going to blacklist anyone. If you fuck with Nyholm and you're HLTV, your org writer, maybe he does blacklist you. Maybe he won't do interviews at events. Maybe he cuts players off from your show. Like, I think in esports, the most saddest thing of the last few years I've noticed, Semler, is as you increase and tighten, like, things like optics, what you can see in the public, people still have to have an outlet. So all we do is create whipping boys. So my joke was, instead of ESL getting wrecked for going with the Saudis, we just wreck Andrew Tate and Carlos twice as hard. We make it's a whipping boy. People don't know what whipping boy is. Back in the day, in these public, they're technically like private schools, but they're called public schools. That's how inverted the English structure is. When you would go to one of these like posh private schools in England, if you were a rich upper class person, they can't actually beat you and give you corporal punishment because you're all wrecked. So what they would do, this is not a joke, is you would have a younger, lesser class boy who would be your roommate. And when you needed to be beaten, they would beat him instead. And the idea is they would make you be friends so that now you feel like, oh, I better behave because they're going to beat him. That's what we now do in esports. Because we can't beat Carlos at BESL, we beat Carlos instead, who did something way not as bad. Because we can't beat like actual like the Saudi government, we just get an 18-year-old kid in America who said the wrong slur one time. We just destroy his life completely. And it's like the actual amount of energy we should have directed there, we just direct it somewhere elsewhere and go, right, man, I've got it off my chest anyway. Like, that phenomenon is so whack, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just running running completely amok. And it's only going to get worse.
Think how mean people were to config over that shit, dude. Like, they were going ham, whereas, like, everyone just lets Astralis have us pass, don't they? They're out hunting. They're out everything, mate. They're out all this shit somehow. Who knows?
It keeps coming around, though, that, like, they went and found the Glaive ones as well.
Yep.
But again, it's like they find them, they give you shit. But again, it's just that that news cycle moves so fast now. The TikTok brain is real. You know, so it's like, so long as you just shut up and ride it out, like those guys, like it's within 24 hours, that's it. They're out of the news cycle and it's moved on to something else. So that's the weird thing about it, is that you're going to have those whipping boys and it's going to keep happening. But the whipping is real quick now, and it just kind of like moves around. But yeah, Glaive was also Glaive also got burned.
Statement he made the other day, by the way? I'll just find it. It should be on Reddit right now. Let me have a look. Past week. Yeah, there we go. Right. Glaive did an interview, and when they've added Hunden and that castle guy, and the quote is this, it says that Glaive never had a more competent coaching team than now. What is the deal? Like, genuinely, guys, bear in mind, we all know from 2020 that sometimes Astralis tells you what to tweet or how to phrase it with that famous, infamous device to Zipnik's super heartfelt tweet that he just copy and pasted out the fucking thing where presumably someone else wrote his tweet for him, right? Bear in mind, we know they do play with media. I actually think at this point in time, dude, I don't think this is coincidence. I think genuinely what these players are doing is they're intentionally actually sort of besmirching the GOAT era Astralis lineup and setup in order to like take that energy and make you believe the new lineup will be better. So we all know Device, when he went to NAPE, did the stupid thing about like we're like five steps ahead here or whatever. And then now Glaive's implying that like Hunden and Castle is more competent than Zonic. By the way, it hasn't even been coached by him yet, according to the official story. Weird how you'd make that comment though, Glaive. It's almost like you know this guy and how he caught. Oh, weird. So all I'll say is like, what? Like, that's actually kind of whack, isn't it? Like, you haven't accomplished anything with this guy, but he's more competent than Zonic. Really? I mean, I know he might mean the set. So having, you know, having two coaches and set, maybe that's better. But even so, it feels like you're just trying to get a controversial headline when you say that, isn't it? Like, isn't that a bit whack, dude? Like, why also, are you sort of trading?
They got a performance coach as well, right? They found some other footballer or handballer or something like that, you know, who's involved now as well. No, 100%, dude. You know it's all about optics. You know it's all, and if you can besmirch, I like that word, besmirch. But if you can throw some shade at a competitor as well in the meantime, because hey, guess what? That makes us, you know, Vitality look bad. Because hey, where's Zonic now? Over on Vitality, are they getting results? Not really. Well, I wonder why. Also with those traitors, Dupree and Magus, you know.
I've just seen that. It's the dickhead who did the post. I'll actually say right now that's not bad, because here's the problem. Apparently, whoever did the quote similar intentionally snipped it for the Reddit quote. The actual quote was: Hunden and Castle are also a potent dynamic duo. I have never had such a competent duo of analyst and coach behind me. So actually Glaives is just like a perfectly legally phrased statement, which is accurate. He's never had an analyst and a coach. So that one actually is actually whack. I guess that, whatever then, Semler, whatever on that topic. They got me.
Yeah, that is fake news.
They got me. It's all good.
All right, well, fair enough. It happens. Happens to the best of them. All right, what's the next one? Santiago La Farga. When did the community decide HLTV gets to decide who the best players are? To what extent do you agree with the way HLTV does it? What factors would you weigh differently to them in determining your own list of top players?
I'm not exaggerating. I genuinely think up until about 4 or 5 years ago, a lot of random fans thought HLTV, because the original client to watch CS 1.6 in was called HLTV. I think some of them actually think it's an official website.
Sure.
I'm not talking about like people in the esports scene like me and you. I mean, like, you know, the random Indian kid who goes on it. I think people used to think it was official back in the day, dude. Because I've always said this, probably the most uninspiring thing about HLTV.org is that they have a functional monopoly that they don't have any rights to. They have zero IP rights. They don't even have rights to attend the tournaments unless the TOs agree. Everyone has given them a monopoly. And then from having a monopoly, you know, unsurprisingly, they win because who can compete with them? Like, I'll give you a very quick anecdote that to me typifies HLTV and why, yeah, they're pretty good, but they are overrated as fuck. Right? Back in 1.6, because they ran the HLTV servers and did journalism at the events, there would be events where it was banned for a journalist like me, the most legendary journalist at the time, to enter the tournament area to take photos or talk to a player. But because HLTV had to go in to do the servers, they would just go in and do the servers and then take all those pictures. So they essentially, Semler, had the most crazy competitive advantage over anyone else attending the same event. Now, did they pay a premium for that? Did they buy that? No, they didn't do anything. They were just given it because that was like a quid pro quo, like I rub your back, you rub my. They've done that with all this shit. Years ago, you'll know this, for about a good 4 or 5 years in the early years of CSGO, when we were doing the desk and and we didn't know the veto, when they knew the veto before the stream said it, they would just put it on the website because they wanted to literally cock the stream and just get that info out there for anyone. And that's why people, you know this, would always say about me, you just checked on HL3. And I would go, A, I didn't, and B, I used to tell people, don't tell me the veto. So all I'll say is, like, that is one aspect that I have always thought was whack, is like, they have always behaved as if they were the official website of Counter-Strike, mate. Like, one of the factors I'll even add in there, as much as I don't like Valorant, the best reason for Valorant to take over from CSGO would be twats like HLTV just have to fuck off forever. Like, you'll be no one then, mate. Without CS, you are nothing.
Yes, but they are. But it's
they're everything because of CS.
Exactly. They are everything now. So it's just like, so long as there's Counter-Strike, you're going to have HLTV. And they're making money hand over fist. So it's like, it's not going to go anywhere anytime soon, considering.
Here's the thing, though. If we want to make the question more interesting, I would rephrase the question like this, Semler, which is, I genuinely don't understand why it has been considered the authority. Because first of all, the early rankings were just a guy like me, but not even as famous as me. People acted like HAL 9000 made those rankings, Semler, and it was totally neutral and unbiased. Like, if I make a ranking, everyone's going to go mental about it. Even if they agree, they're going to find the one name they are. Like, wow, this guy's sixth, he should be eighth. And then they'll go mental, right? No one ever did that to the Twiggris guy or whatever. Like, they never did. And then secondly,
never knew. That's the thing. He wasn't really.
He also wasn't made public. Yeah, they made it like the HLTV ranking. But then the thing to me is, everyone normally refuses to acknowledge anything that's not official. They're always like, that's just your opinion. But I agree, they do it. HLTV in CSGO represents groupthink. Whoever they tell you is number two, do people even say it to this day? They just go, you know, Cold Zero was the number one player in 2016, 2017. On HLTV.org, make sure you put that part in. God didn't come down and go, and I be decree that you are the... No, who said that? It was just some guy, a Serbian guy who works for HLTV said that. Look, I agree, but no one gave that official title. So I agree. That's the weirder thing to me. Fans will dispute every other opinion, but if it's HLTV, they do just take it like program. It's like CNN.com. Like, oh, this is the new current thing.com. What do you mean? He has always been the number one player of 2016. You know what I mean? Like, give me a break. Yeah, no, the joke is someone get that meme of the NPC and all they do is like unclick, like Nico was the number two player of now Chiro is the number two player. Yeah. They don't even think about it, do they?
That is precisely it, though. That is the way that it works. All right. It's go. Kids tend to really like trucks, dinosaurs, astronauts, or some other niche growing up. What was yours? I was just having this conversation the other day, actually. Legos. But like before Legos were like,
me, I could tell.
Dude, they were the shit because you just got a bag they're of thinking, Legos.
That's similar. I know where you're going already. They're going to make the mistake in the modern day of thinking that you mean a kit. You just mean what I mean, a box full of Legos, and you create what you're going to create, right?
Exactly. And all I did was just build castles and build spaceships, all I did everything. Was build forts, build castles, and then have the guys and like reenact, you know, like fucking battles in my head with like knights and shit. That's literally all I did growing up. And then it's like, oh, hey, I'm done now. You just undo it all. Doesn't matter. It all goes back in the box. And then tomorrow you take it out again and you make a completely new castle. Yeah, exactly. You make a completely new thing. And then all of a sudden you're off on another adventure. And that's literally how I spent all of my time as a kid, was just playing with Legos. That's all I can remember, really. Like, of my younger age, like, I'd go to friends' houses and we'd play Legos. You know, like, that would be the thing to do.
Back then, basically, like you're saying, the difference that a modern person won't get is back then, Lego was like sandbox mode. It was like, do whatever you want with this crazy environment. And it's all coming from your imagination. In the modern day, does seem like nerds just buy a kit like Star Wars and exactly. Orset. It's all branded. They make it, and then as you say, they don't even undo it. They put it on a shelf like, yes. What is this shit? Like, you
know. It's like some fucking ghetto statue, just Roblox statue or whatever. No, fuck off. It's just, it is just that. What the fuck's that? The figurine, the Funko Pop or whatever, you know? It's, yes, like collectors, figurines, whatever. It's like all culture or whatever. It's like, no, that's not what Legos are supposed to be. Legos are supposed to be about making your own shit cool. Like making your own stuff out of your imagination. That was the whole point of it. It was so much fun. So yeah, no, I definitely Legos growing up. That was just the thing. Did you have something like that?
I was also playing a lot of Legos. That was a big one for me. The other ones, obviously, I don't think people get this as well. Even when I was like six or something, I was on like playing on Spectrums and other computers that were old school shit. So I also played on like really boomer computers when I was really young.
I didn't have that. I didn't have that experience. Like playing with the
like
old...
I had the ones where you would actually, unironically, it was like a cassette that you put in and it took like 10 minutes to load the game by playing the cassette. And then sometimes it would break like before it even loaded and the screen would be all like colors. And it would be like some, not literally that, but you know, some music, yeah, like that.
No, well, like the, like when it used to be that you had to connect to the internet with dial up and it'd be like, so like the whole fucking dude. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. All right. Well, that was our last question, dude. So, that's pretty much a show. Unless you have any, do you have anything to add?
By the way, that actually is how you know if you are old enough on the internet in terms of like knowing the old tech. Because you know that like meme people always post where it's like the hairs going up on someone's arm and it's showing what makes that happen. Back in the day, what would make the hairs go up and you would be so hype was when you would start that sound you're making, but after you've done the dial up a million times, you know exactly the sequence. It's when it would hit the point where you know it made the connection. That connection was like, ooh, it's got, oh. You got a little bit. It was like the hit of an espresso. You just got ooh, nice. Ooh,
do you remember? Wow. Do you remember the internet, other thing that I was thinking about, sir, the other day was because now phones, you don't have that with speakers anymore. But like, you remember when you had your old phone, like very like the old cell phones. If you had them next to a speaker, you knew when a text or a call was coming ahead of time because it would be making the noise on the speaker. You know, so you had like an early warning system for.
Here's an example of how boomer Richard Lewis is. Because even people who watch this show will know what I'm talking about. Dude, even last year, Richard would still have that problem. I haven't seen anyone have that problem for like 10 years at this point in time. He would just get that sound on his monitor, like, and I'd be like, have you got your phone there? He's like, oh yeah, my bad. I'm like, what phone is that? Like a Nokia from 99 years. I know, like, what? He was actually having that problem for some reason.
He's got a Nokia.
I haven't seen that happen to anyone in so many years now. It's mental.
That's amazing, dude. He's got to have like a Nokia brick or something like that, dude. He's got to have one of those old ones.
Or he's literally got like the one from the Matrix, like the flip up, like meet me on the roof or whatever. Like, yeah, I know.
Probably a flip phone, yeah. Fucking A. All right, well, that's a show, my dudes. That's a show. Thank you so much, my dude. Good times. Good start to the year. Good show for the first year. And thanks everybody who hung out. Thanks everybody tuning in. And thanks everybody for your support. I hope you all have an absolutely fantastic start to the year and that you had some great holidays and some great time with some family and that you're ready to kick ass and take names this year. But yeah, we'll be back next week with the next episode. And until then, have a great one and we'll see you then.
Chris is constantly in the picture. Paul's still very much in the round. Oh, Chris! He's found three. It's down to a 2-on-2. Chris, can he close this with an ace? Oh, my God!
Gives him a chance, at least, in this season.